So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review.
Welcome, wrestling fans. I'm Chris Kloss alongside of Larry Rivera. And we want to welcome you all to our debut show of XPW Wrestling. Saturday night, April 15th, live at the LA Sports Arena, Supreme will defend his King of the Deathmatch title against Axel Rotten in a Japanese-style deathmatch with beds of nails, thumbtacks, light bulbs, barbed wire.
Wait a minute, Chico. Wait. This is the United States, man. This is where pro wrestling was born. This ain't Japan. This ain't Vietnam, man. This is pro wrestling. When you go outside, you look on the marquee, it says professional wrestling. What is this deathmatch doing? What are we doing here, man?
Calm down. This is the U.S. We're not in Japan. This is wrestling, but this is extreme wrestling. This is XPW. We've become a blend of violence, of sex. And, you know, we just got done seeing the violence. But when we come back, we will see the sex.
Except the one dude loves John Cena. Loves John Cena.
What happened to your eye, man?
I was wrestling with Holden at my mom's house, and I fell off the side of the bed. And
oh, shit.
It's crazy. I hit here. Like, wow. this is where it hurts, right here, but it just all the blood went here.
I thought you were going to have, like, a really, like, tough
No, I wish. I wish. Way. But I did get this amazing, best Christmas gift I got this year. Cole Cabana gave me a shout-out on Twitter.
Yeah, oh, really? I saw that.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
I'm on that Chris Gerhardt show.
Yeah.
Wants Fucked Up to come on.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I want Damien on Chris Gerhardt show now.
That's awesome.
And I was like, oh, yeah.
Are you buddies with him?
No.
No?
Not even.
Oh, but he knows your band, I guess.
I guess. Well, I did give him, like, in the Chicago Reader.
Yeah, you were quoted.
Because my friend wrote that article.
Yeah.
And you know, and this same friend that wrote the GQ Punk thing and the GQ Daniel Bryan thing.
Right. Cool.
And stuff. So he – and so, like, yeah, I guess he knows me that way. But once again, I think it's, like, one of those things where, like, I will never get over with wrestlers. Like, wrestlers are never going to be like, that dude, he's the coolest. But I'm friends with all the people they like. So that's my in, you know? I'm friends with the comedian world. So I think that's my in with Cole Cabana. Friends with all the old punk dudes. That's my in with CM Punk. So.
Gotta have a TV channel to air some of this stuff on.
I do need to have my own TV channel. Yeah. I do.
Yeah, get his show on Much Music.
I know. If only I had a show on Much Music. No. Now they let me do whatever the hell I want on that show. It's gotten really weird.
Really?
Yeah, it's gotten really bizarre.
Like they don't care?
They care, but we've actually started doing okay in numbers a lot.
Because ever since
okay in numbers.
The time change?
Yeah, the time change. So we're doing better than we were, and they're just like, yeah, have fun with it. Do weird stuff. So I had one episode where I interviewed two of me, you know, like a parallel dimension.
Really?
But then every time we did a reverse shot for the stand, and I got my friend Jason, who's like way taller than me, skinny and black. So every time it cuts to a reverse shot, he's wearing all my clothes. But you're like, what? That does not look at all like the same dude. So just
That's
doing
awesome, man.
Yeah, just doing weird stuff like
it's
that.
Like you have Much Music now for your like school pro.
Pretty much.
University course.
It's pretty much like grade 11 media studies, but put on national
That's awesome.
Platform.
That's incentive to watch, man.
Yeah, exactly. We had Kevin Drew on last week and Chris Murphy for the Christmas episode and they're like, so what do we do? Do you want to ask about the new record? I'm like, no, Chris, you just come downstairs and say, oh, my God, this looks like a snuff movie. I'm out of here. And that's all. He's like, that's really what you got me to do? And I'm like, yes. Go.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
Show Damien your shirt. Oh, yes.
Let's see.
This is my Christmas present.
Whoa. That's awesome. Look at this. That's amazing. I was going to say the Kai-Tai tribute. I actually brought, I have Damien bobbleheads for both of you, but I forgot.
Oh, shit, one. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I've always wanted one. Thank
well,
you
hey,
much.
No problem. I'm glad I can make you. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. This is I didn't get John anything that.
I'm kind of disappointed there was no review of Raw on Christmas morning.
Yeah.
Like, I was ready to open that present.
Yeah, we really dropped the ball on Christmas morning.
Well, New Year's Day, you guys can make it up.
He's got a family and everything. No, we're not doing that either.
I can't believe
we're
this.
We're off for
2 weeks. No, I know. I knew you guys were off.
You two should do Review of Raw.
That would be amazing. My New Year's will be watching probably Raw on
Seriously?
Time shifting after my
you're
kids
not,
go to
bed. You're not doing anything?
Hell no. I hate New Year's.
You never do anything?
I hate New Year's. I hate New Year's when I was straight edge, and now that I'm not, I even hate it.
Never have to play a show or anything?
We do. We've played tons of shows on New Year's. Actually, one of the best shows we ever played was in New Year's, on New Year's in England, but for the most part, yeah, like it's. And we played in, actually, New York, we used to always wind up playing on New Year's, but now it's like, I've always had terrible experiences, you know? Like, it's, I think people put a lot of pressure on that night, and because of it, they're like, intensely aggro the entire time, and it's very easy to like.
I hate New Year's.
Oh,
everything's more expensive, too.
Everything's way more expensive. Like, yeah. Now that we have kids, it's like, for Laura and I to go out, it would be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars before we even leave the house to get to like a babysitter for two kids on New Year's Eve. So it's like, we'll just go on the 2nd or the 30th or something.
That's the smart way to go about it. Yeah. It's like those families that I actually knew a family who their parents would they'd celebrate Christmas on the 27th so they could get the boxing
days. That is a smart move.
Amazing.
That is a very smart move. Or just convert to Orthodox. Like some sort of Eastern Orthodox religion, because they have their Christmas a little later, right? Ukrainian Christmas is after.
I think so.
I think it's in the middle of January, you know. But I unfortunately am a mungy cake wasp and celebrate Christmas on the 25th.
It's not New Year's for you till when?
Oh, not until February.
February New Year's.
I have to look at the moon. I'm not really.
Yes, yeah. You're like, yeah. I just got to check the moon. If you can get the moon anyway here. Actually, that's not true. We are going out on New Year's. Our friends, family friends of ours are going to have like a family party with the kids. Party. And then all the kids will go home and they have their adult friends come
here
over.
I was expecting some like rock star story. I don't know.
This is my rock star story, gentlemen. Getting out of the house and
downloading a podcast.
Talking about XPW. Yeah, like. I told you, my thing is
giving you a black eye.
My kid beating me up. I have a black eye right now from fighting six dudes in an MMA style battle
outside
royale.
Of a bar in Syracuse, New York.
Yeah, exactly.
Where Owen Hart then gave you an enziguri to explain why you can't make your show date.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's your smile?
Oh, he stole my smile. Yeah. No, I fell off the bed and my son gave me a black eye. So.
I like how we've all just accepted that the show has begun at this point.
I think we just fell into it. Yeah, I love when you guys do the rolling starts to the show.
Got a solid 6 minutes here.
I know. And that's what you like when I download the podcast. When I'm sitting there on the toilet with my bong, listening to you guys talk about wrestling. Not to give you an intense visual.
Yeah, thanks for the visual.
That's the real high low.
When I like to talk to people.
I feel like now, Vin, I feel like we were like trailblazers, me coming on here and talking about pot. I know it pisses off some people off, but because now look, you listen to that what's his name, Conan, and he's talking about smoking weed on the air. He's anytime he says Iranian tobacco.
Oh, I thought you meant Conan O'Brien.
No.
That would have been something on TBS.
Conan's always just blazing up on TBS.
I know he's
now.
On cable now, but
It's weird. Him and George
NBC. And just,
Lopez just does heroin. He just bangs heroin the whole show now. Yeah. It's weird. No, but I feel like we kind of set that tone for the Conan show.
We had nothing to do with that.
Yeah. The last time you were here in studio, there were a few trips for you.
That's true. That was the one where we, that was like, I was worried I was never getting invited back because I was a little badly behaved.
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
TNH showed up and all propriety went out the window that evening.
Now, that was the night Jerry Lawler had his heart attack.
It was, and it was the weirdest night because we remember you knew and you're like, and we're like, don't spoil it, John.
Yeah, Wade was fucking out. He was like, shut your mouth.
Yeah, and you're like,
don't
dude,
ruin Raw
you're
for
like,
me.
Dude, this isn't a spoiler in a good way at all. We're like, don't ruin it, don't. And then it like happens. It's like, oh, this is not.
What did you think of the heart attack angle when he came back? That was when we were in Montreal. We had our private screening of Raw.
You know what? It's weird, and I knew it was coming. You know, I think we all kind of knew deep down that it was coming. You know, and especially given what we watched this last night or this week with XPW.
it very tame.
None of this stuff shocks at all. Like, that's the other thing is, like, you know, I know WWE's done a lot to re-educate the audience and stuff like that, but, like, I don't know, I was not shocked, and I think it was more tasteful having at least Heyman come out and do something interesting with it than it would have been if, like, they had The Miz as a heel come out and use it to and do a terrible promo.
The Miz pretending to have a heart attack.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, might get cheers.
But I think the for me the issue was that the WWE in not so much that, but like. In its current form, it's a very kid-friendly product. This is the same show where you have that Susan G. Komen stuff, mm-hmm. you have Be a Star. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On XPW, you probably never see a Susan G. Komen ad or anything.
No, but it's funny because I was watching XPW and I'm like halfway through it, like, who are the baby faces and who are the heels, right? Like, you're like, when you're watching, you're like, am I supposed to, is she the good guy? Like, are we cheering her when she comes out and sexually assaults another woman? And then the audience is cheering the whole time. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely nowhere near as extreme in WWE, but I kind of think the same thing. Like, you're watching it and you're watching John Cena say all these heelish things, not come out to save Ric Flair, come out and destroy Dolph Ziggler's cash-in attempt. And it's like, you're the babyface. You're meant to be taking the higher ground. You're meant to be looking at Dolph Ziggler cashing in and being backstage, being like, okay, now's my shot to get the belt and show you who's better. Not ruining his attempt to cash it in. Like, it just seems like it's like WWE right now, like, who's the heel? Who's the babyface? Like, I'm cheering for CM Punk.
Cena's a special case because depending on the city, like that was what? Was that Philly when he did that?
I think so.
It was a city where he was being booed. So, like, depending on the city.
But even then, it's like he's meant to be the ultimate babyface, like the ultimate good guy who's like, you know, there's no gray area with John Cena. I think that's why people hate him so much. But there is always gray area with Cena because he's a dick to people. Like, he's mean. Right. He'll, like, you know, talk behind AJ's back with his buddy Sheamus, you know, like whispering in his ear and all this kind of stuff. Like, it's just like he is a bad guy. Like, and it's like the stuff CM Punk says, I'm like, he's saying truth. He's talking truth. Whereas John Cena, I don't think, always talks the truth. But it's just funny watching XPW is, like, you know, obviously much more extreme in every way, shape, and form. But kind of my same complaint I've had with WWE recently. Like, there's no – like, Ryback's a bully, you know? I want to see a little guy beat Ryback. I really would love to see, like, Ziggler tap Ryback out. Well, no, I'm just going to tap him. Daniel Bryan to tap Ryback out. I'd love to see it because, like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm conditioned in the old way, but I root for the little guy who's being beaten up by a big guy, you know? And, like, when a big guy – I didn't understand, like, how that was supposed to get – Ryback over that whole time. He's coming out and just beating up people smaller than him. And even if he's beating up two people smaller than him, it's still like one guy beating up two little scrawny guys. Like, if they made him a heel, I would have been like, oh, that's great. And then turned him gradually into a babyface. Anyway, I go on about Ryback.
I think people just get into a guy that's just presented like a monster and he just kills guys. And people, if they have a certain charisma about them, people just get behind.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's the thing is, like, if you look at other monsters in the past, like, even if you looked at Goldberg, like, Goldberg was fighting the NWO. He was fighting an army of big guys. Ryback's just like this jerk who showed up, who was stronger than everyone, beat up a bunch of people smaller than him, and now is still kind of going after smaller people. It's not like he's going after John Cena or, well, I guess Undertaker's not around, Kane, you know, like someone like bigger than him. I could see him being the babyface. Even seeing him now, like, standing up to, like, you know, CM Punk, it's like, well, I want Punk to – I'd love to see Punk tap this dude out or GTS him. That would be incredible to see him GTS him.
So he's presenting a very a Christy Miss
very
conflict for you.
Exactly. Like, who – like, I'm not going to – I don't think I'll ever be able to cheer for this, like, roided-out bully, you know. And I loved him when he was Skip Sheffield. I thought he was going to be awesome as Skip Sheffield. I didn't think he was – I don't think he was awesome yet as Skip Sheffield, but I think – that character I could have gotten behind a lot more than the Ryback character.
I wanted to ask you as well. We had a number of people when we said we were having you on. A lot of people have recently seen you hanging out with Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about this. Was done like what, back in the spring? Like, this was a while ago, wasn't it?
No, it was late summer.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, if I remember correctly, it was late summer because we'd done a show one other time. We played on the Christmas episode last year, or 2 years ago now, because it's just after Christmas. Merry, happy holidays, everyone. But we played on his show, and we did Jingle Bells, and they had us on the show, but he wasn't there because he was traveling, shooting more stuff. This was actually on – this wasn't on The Layover. This was on his other show, No Reservations.
Yeah.
Then so he invited us back. They were like, we want you to come on. We're going to come to Toronto to shoot the show. The Layover, we've never been to Toronto, you know, and then they asked us for a huge list of places we like. And so Mike, our guitar player, gave them an insane list of 100 places, and they
went made to it to the comedy bar.
They made it to the comedy bar. Yeah, they made
my
it like
Matt Foley.
I'm going to say like there's obviously stuff they forgot. Like I'm like, how could you not talk about Greek food on the Danforth? How could you not talk about Korean food and stuff like that? But like, but they did. They hit on like a lot of stuff. They talked about dim sum. They talked about roti. They talked about Porchetta, which is like my favorite restaurant in Toronto, Porchetta or whatever, depending on who you talk to, I guess it's pronounced. But like all these places I really liked. And then they had us on the show. And it's weird because I don't drink, and drinking's a big part of the show, so they got us hammered. Yeah. So as you see the night go, it gets a little looser, the conversation. They edit a lot out. At one point I like confront him on the fact that he hates chicken McNuggets. Like that's his that's his thing, is that he thinks the most disgusting thing he ever ate is a chicken McNugget. And I will concur, except with the buffalo wing sauce in America, which is incredible. It's like incredible. It changes that
like chicken nuggets.
It elevates that chicken. If you like them, John, you're going to love them with this buffalo wing sauce.
What was his defense?
He just said it was disgusting processed food. I was a little drunk, so I don't really remember his response to my critique by this way either. So, but he was fantastic. Like it really surprised me how much he knew about music and how involved he was in the New York punk scene back in the day. Like knew everyone. Like at one point he's like, it was just after the Cro-Mag stabbing. I don't know if you heard about when the dude from one band, the next member of the band, stabbed the new member of the band. Allegedly. I guess he's been thrown into court. I'm pretty sure he did it, though.
Judge Abraham.
Yeah. The judge, jury, and executioner Abraham, but not in this case because I'm scared of all members involved in this conflict. But anyway, so Anthony Bourdain's like, what about the band the Cro-Mags and that stabbing? And I'm like, well, you know, you probably knew one of the dudes involved. He's like, oh, I don't know. I stopped going to shows like way before they started playing. I'm like, you remember the drummer of the band The Stimulators? And he's like, oh, yeah, that little kid, that little tiny, because The Stimulators had like a 13-year-old drummer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's the dude with the knife. And he's like, for real? And I'm like, yeah, he grew up and he's still around. And so, yeah, it was weird talking to him, finding out how deep his knowledge went in like New York punk rock and things like that. And once again, a huge thrill. Funny, too, because no other person I've ever kind of hung out with, like in a band or an actor or just someone I've been around with, has had that many people running in saying, I just heard you were here on Twitter, and so I just want to get my photo taken with you really quickly, Anthony Bourdain. So there'd be all these people coming in, running in from like all over the place, getting their photos taken with them and stuff like that. So
how'd you get involved with them in the first place?
I guess he's a fan of the band, apparently. Like he knew our music, knew our record. Like that's like, you know, like as much as I kind of talk trash about touring and everything in the band, like that's always the thing that surprises me, when like someone that I look up to has heard of the band, you know, or you know, shockingly likes the band or something like that. It's always like, oh my gosh, like you're not from this world at all. And then it's funny to find out how they are kind of from this world in a weird way too, you know, especially with Anthony Bourdain.
Do you remember that restaurant across from our hotel at WrestleMania where it was one of his spots that he went to?
Yeah.
And they just play it on an old VCR
loop
of Anthony Bourdain attending.
If you get featured on that show or anything involving him, that's like, man, the greatest seal of approval.
Oh, absolutely. It makes you a tourist attraction. Oh, you know, and a lot of people my band.
That was the hot dog place, right?
Yes, it was the gourmet hot dog.
I threw it out. It was so gross.
I loved it.
It's weird. Like, this will make your restaurant, being on one of these types of shows. Yeah. And, like our band, when we went to Melbourne, we watched the Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations, where he goes to Melbourne, and we're like, he goes to this insane Szechuan restaurant. We're like, oh, amazing. We took it down, went to it. It was amazing.
Wow.
And it was, so it's like, it's great to kind of have, you know, these sort of visual tour guides for you.
How often does he go to a restaurant and says, this is absolutely terrible?
I don't know. It would not shock me that he would say it live on air, though. He's not one that holds his
He punches no reservations.
No reservation whatsoever about saying anything to anyone.
he was pretty harsh on Toronto when he first
yeah.
came to town.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, it's not a beautiful
the
city.
The architecture's terrible and blah, blah, blah. But then everyone in that episode also rammed on the architecture, including the drummer of my band. I'm like, I think Toronto's beautiful. Like, I don't know why you guys are saying this. I love this city. But, yeah, no, it's funny, too. It's kind of sad, too. Two of the businesses or three of the businesses he featured on the show went under
right.
by the time the episode went to air, including, like, my favorite record store, Hits and Misses, which
yeah,
is gone
now. Yeah, that's gone.
I know. And he was on the episode. And it's like, it's one of those things where they were on that episode. Who knows, like, how that could have changed things. People coming to visit, you know. Yeah. Increases foot traffic a little bit. Like, I know Voodoo Donuts in Portland, which is incredible donuts, like ridiculous donuts. They have a donut with bacon on it, like the original, I think, bacon donut.
Oh, yeah. Bacon donut.
Yeah, they've got cereal on donuts, Tang on donuts. It's amazing. Incredible donuts. Anyway, like, we used to go there all the time. And now you can go there, and there's like a 25-minute lineup, 35-minute lineup, because it was featured on like one of those food travel shows. So, you know, it's weird. That's all people spend their money on these days. People stop buying books, video games, movies, records.
You can't download food.
No, you can't
Not
download
yet.
Food and clothes.
You
it's like
can't download food.
And hipsters, for what everyone wants to say, really made food kind of awesome. You know, like they were the ones that were like, oh, it's got to be farm to table. It's got to be this. It's got to be that. And now food's kind of amazing. You can get really good food for not a lot of money now.
So where have you been now since September, roughly? Because you Ooh. Were going back to Japan, weren't
we
you?
We went
right
to Japan.
That?
Yeah. I went to Japan with Chris Charlton and went to a show at Kurgan Hall.
That's pretty cool.
It was incredible. Yeah. It was insane. I was incredibly jet-lagged and you know, but he was like, it's going to happen. It's this tag team tournament. Like, you got to come. You should come. And I'm like, okay. And I was so tired, but I'm so happy I did it. So happy that I did it.
How was it? What was the show that you went to?
It was New Japan tag team tournament. And I think it was, like, as far as my understanding is, these must be more like a house show
right.
type tournament that they run. Because I don't think it wasn't televised. It wasn't shot.
Yeah, I think it was just one of their shows, part of their tag tournament. And then it built up to the finals, which was their last pay-per-view.
Which is at the iPay-per-view, and then there was also where they had Tanahashi versus, I forget his name, the guy who's shaved head with like blonde hair with glasses.
Yujiro. Takahashi?
Yeah, Takahashi, yeah. And it was, Takahashi. It was, incredible, like, show. It was so bizarre to see, like, you know, seeing Alex Shelley there, having seen him, you know, up in Mississauga at some of those Ring and Ears events, you know, and then seeing him over, you know, in Japan performing. But seeing, you know, all these people that I would
you could
not
see Lance Archer.
Saw Lance Archer, yeah, exactly.
Lance Hoyt.
Like seeing Lance Archer and seeing Davey Boy Smith Jr. now.
Yeah, that's what he's going
as a tag team, seeing them there is incredible because they tower. There's these giants there, and they're
much better in New Japan.
Much better. Much better. And, like, you know, I think neither one was the greatest promo, and they don't really, I guess, have to cut, you know, because most of the promos are cut in Japanese, so, like, you don't have to cut a traditional good promo as an English wrestler.
You just have to speak some English.
Yeah, exactly. So. In an aggressive voice. And look tough, but
my favorite was, like, those old FMW DVDs. And it would be like Mike Awesome in there talking.
Yeah.
It's all these Japanese promos. And he would just be like, Terry Funk, I'm going to fuck you up. I don't give a shit. And it's like they don't care because like nobody knows.
Jericho would be a hushed crowd.
Yeah.
Come on, motherfucker.
That's great. They must have so much fun there. You say whatever you want.
No, and
the Japanese workers when they come over here, they
probably just say the craziest shit,
calling everyone assholes. And
I remember seeing Forward, this Japanese hardcore band, and the only thing he could say in English was like, "I do not speak English," and everyone in the crowd's like clapping, like yay, and they're just laughing themselves, like this is fucking hilarious that they're laughing at this.
How was the Japanese crowd?
It was awesome. It was really cool. It was a pretty full house. And
like how many people?
It's hard to say, but I'd say that club's not bigger than the Phoenix or club. So that hall's not too much bigger than the Phoenix. Like,
really?
It's kind of like, you know, there's like a camera side, which I guess would go all the way up to the top, but then everything else is kind of, you know, kind of half.
Kind of like an indie show.
Kind of like an indie show. I'd say it's like a big indie show. Like, you know, probably an indie show that any indie promoter in Toronto would be very happy to get that kind of set up an audience for. But it also is crazy because we're walking up and Chris is pointing out on the wall, like, this is like people writing down cards from as far back as like the early 80s, mid 80s and stuff. Like, you know, so you're everywhere you go, you're stepping on history. And at one point we're looking in the crowd and there's this guy. I'm like, oh my God, it's Jushin Liger, like just sitting in the crowd. And there's this dude in like a tracksuit, but the Jushin Liger, like the mask.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
and then I'm like, oh, that's crazy. And then he's like, yeah, I wonder if he's going to do it, because he's right by the heel entrance. And he's like, hey, maybe he's going to do a run-in. It's not him. Like, it's just some guy in a tracksuit wearing the mask the entire wrestling thing, the entire show. And then Jushin Liger comes out the heel side or the babyface side at one point with a, you know, with some faction. And I'm like, oh, it's definitely not him.
I always remember when me and Wei went to Ring of Honor. I've told this story before. It was WrestleMania weekend in Chicago. It was like 2006. And it was the six-man tag with like Do Fixer and Blood Generation. It got match of the year that year in The Observer. And me and Wei just watched this match, and we were just, like, stunned at the end, like, watching this. It was like, this is, like, the next evolution of pro wrestling, the speed at which they worked and just hit everything. It was an incredible match. And I go to the washroom, and one of the guys from Blood Generation comes into the next stall, the urinal next to me, and just has a piss. He's just peeing amongst the fans after putting on the match of the year. And it was either you or me that, like, came back and was like, I just pissed next to the guy we just watched there. It's like, there, that is indie wrestling at its finest. Guy puts on a match of the year candidate and has to go use the public washroom right afterwards.
Well, that's because there probably was no backstage dressing room bathroom. That's for sure.
This was at the Frontier Fieldhouse in Chicago Ridge.
I played the Frontier Fieldhouse.
You played there?
Yeah, we played a festival at the Frontier Fieldhouse.
Oh, man. We were there for 10 hours that day because we had to shoot stuff beforehand.
I've heard you guys talk about this on the show.
Yeah, our favorite one was we wanted to interview Gabe Sapolsky before we left, and we had to do it after the show. And Wei had to get Gabe all ready for the interview, and he's just like lighting it, and then Gabe is just like, how do I look? And Wei's just without skipping a beat, you look beautiful. And Gabe was just okay.
Just hey,
I was very tired, but he didn't look bad.
What's that wrestler actually in talking about the evolution of wrestling? He's a New Japan guy, he's an English guy.
Prince Devitt.
That guy.
Ireland.
Oh, Ireland.
Don't
Ireland.
Upset
oh, my God.
Listeners.
That was really offensive of me. I didn't hear him talk. But anyway, Ireland, sorry. But he was just unbelievable, phenomenal. Like, I just couldn't, like, his stuff he was doing in the ring and just, like, stuff I hadn't seen anyone do before. There's also that new guy in Ring of Honor who's Capoeira. He's like in capoeira style, like that's where he trained.
Yeah. Him. Oh, what the hell's his name? Yeah, I know who. You're
I think he's
about.
Really fun to watch and does stuff that I've never seen before. I listened to the Best Of show the other night that you guys did. Can't believe no one said Steen. I think Steen is in a
for what category?
Everything. I think he's in. He's not. It's funny because it's like it's almost like Bret the Hitman Hart was to WWE, like the best guy at the worst possible time. I think Ring of Honor is going through some weird times, but I just think like
I agree. He's the brightest spot in that promotion.
And
I don't know. With his matches, like, I just find so much. Like, did you see the generical ladder match?
It's brutal.
Like, to me, it's like, I don't enjoy that part about pro wrestling. And it's like, yeah, it's a great spectacle, but it's just not.
Yeah.
You put that to me against, you know, for instance, Minoru Suzuki Tanahashi.
Yeah, okay,
it's like,
yeah.
I'm going the Tanahashi route every time. And he's a phenomenal talent. And I wish the guy wouldn't kill himself to the degree he does. In terms of mic work, I think he's one of the best. I just wouldn't put him above Punk. For
yeah. And if I spoke Japanese, obviously, I think New Japan or stuff I've heard about DDT or any of these promotions would probably be right up there. Because, you know, New Japan, like, everyone just looks so awesome. Like, every heel was a cool heel, and you understood why they were a heel and their motivations for being a heel. And that's me not understanding the language and barely knowing who was who, other than listening to like Japanese audio wrestling, like, you know, and looking at the odd match on YouTube. It's hard for me, like, obviously not watching on the regular base to follow stuff, but I just found everything about it, like the presentation, the babyface presentation, the heel presentation, it was all so cool.
And all the matches are, I find, for the most part, it's like, they all have different styles. Yeah. And it's like a show never drags for me with New Japan, because it's like, okay, we've got Yuji Nagata here who has his own style. And then we have Minoru Suzuki, who's like this hybrid MMA shoot fighter, mm-hmm. that's working pro wrestling. You have Tanahashi, who's your traditional like babyface world champion. You have like the, for lack of a better term, like the cruiserweights or junior heavyweights with like Devitt, Lowkey, and Ibushi. And you watch this show and it's like, man, you get like, if something doesn't work for you, something else will. You know, it's not like I feel like I'm watching a WWE show where everyone is WWE style for the most part.
Yeah.
You don't really differ from this kind of small area of what is considered their version of wrestling. With New Japan, it's just like you get such a better, I guess, variety.
Yeah, that's what I also think is like when Ring of Honor is doing really well too, when like you're seeing a Ring of Honor show. When you're going to Ring of Honor live especially, you kind of have that feeling too. Like you get
Mouth had that a show of the year, Glory by Honor.
Oh, you're really
the Mississauga.
Yeah, the Mississauga one.
I didn't miss Border that Wars one. Was the one you went to.
Border Wars was like raved about. I still think it's the best. I've never had a live experience like that in my life. Like even show wise, like where it just felt like
even everyone, music.
Yeah, even concert. Sorry, music wise. Yeah, like playing concerts. Like, you know, like it felt like going to like something like seeing the Foo Fighters in Australia, like in front of 50,000 people. All screaming every word, you know? Like, I like the Foo Fighters. I'm not, like, the biggest fan, so I didn't know every word to scream along. But this was, like, felt like that in a much smaller environment, but everyone just screaming for Steen to win, mm-hmm. you know? And I love Davey Richards, too, but I just wanted to see Steen beat him and get the belt, you know? And it just felt really – and that was that moment where you're like, oh, this is pro – I don't think I'd ever had that at a pro wrestling event, because I've never been to any of the big pay-per-views. And I've like, you know, been to hell shows, obviously, and been to like, you know, local indie events and stuff like that. But that was the first time I ever felt like that, you know, and obviously on the scale of a ROH show, but a big fight type atmosphere.
My friend Justin told this joke on Twitter about a month or two ago and got the wrath of the Foo Fighters fans attacking
really?
Him. He apparently Dave Grohl tweeted something about like Nickelback walks into a bar and they look for an open mic or something like that. I can't remember what Dave Grohl wrote. So my buddy replies to Dave Grohl and writes, Dave Grohl walks into a bar, nothing happens. And the fans, the Foo Fighter fans, just inundated this guy with insults and just killed him. I found it rather interesting.
It's funny, too, because like, that's like a new thing. Before you could say when we were kids, you could say anything you wanted about any celebrity as loud as you wanted. But you now, because of Twitter and Facebook, I guess too, but I found out because of Twitter, you can't. Because these fans that some of these people have are psychotic. I still get death threats once a month from a Katy Perry fan.
Wow.
Over the things I said about that one thing I said about Katy Perry, which I don't know if I told you this. I found out that video is funded by the U.S. Marines. It turns out
it
was directed by a rapper.
You were outraged.
Yeah, it was directed by a rapper, and I found out from another friend of that rapper that it was it was entirely paid for. Hmm. You know, which is what I saw and I pointed out, and unfortunately now I have to deal with 16 and 14 and 13-year-old kids threatening to kill me.
Yeah, but if you don't stand up for anything, you fall for everything.
Oh, exactly. And also, like, you know, I want – artists have to be held to more accountability. We live in a weird time where musicians have carte blanche to do whatever you want. Like, you have really political artists that are winding up in commercials now, and it's like they've signed off on that, you know? And, like, and I'm not saying it's wrong for them to be in commercials. I'm not saying that I might – but if you think it's bullshit that an artist that you support and buy their music and go to their shows, if you think they're doing something that – is bullshit. You have a right to call them on it. Not that I've ever bought a Katy Perry record or gone to any of her shows, but I still think, you know, we got to start calling these musicians on something.
So you won't be in an ad for the Marines buying any music.
You put a big enough check in front of me, God only knows what I'll do for my kids. But I'm saying not right now. It's not in the cards.
The U.S. Marines just pulled their sponsorship from the UFC. They were like
really
one of the main sponsors.
Yeah. What for?
They said that they gave them a very kind of a political response saying that we are just looking at where we are allocating our funds and just don't want it here. There's a belief that the Culinary Union, which has tried to make the UFC's life just miserable,
yeah.
had something to do with it, because they go after all these sponsors about how immoral the UFC is, the fact that casino workers that the Fertittas run aren't unionized.
Yeah.
And it's a big part of like the New York problem of not being able to get in there.
Yeah.
Too. So that's allegedly what
seems like they've been one sponsor that would not respond to the threats of organized labor.
Yeah,
you know, like you don't really. Yeah, we're the armed forces. We do not give a hell.
Before we get into the review, we did get a couple questions. Some people wanted to know they're looking to get into FMW. What's a good starting off point?
Oh.
What's a good DVD to get them going if they are experiencing FMW for the same time? And Wei, feel free to jump in.
Wow, I'm going to say, I wish I could remember the names of all the shows because they all have like. There's one that focuses really heavily on the women's division, and I wish I could remember what it was called, but it's amazing because it is also just like all women blood matches, which is a rare thing to see in North America.
And that's what you recommend for somebody starting out?
Well, it's not like there's a shallow end with FMW, like. There's one, yeah, there's a show where they just put one dude through a table. It's like XPW. Like, there's no, you got to jump in with both feet. If you want to see this kind of wrestling, you got to commit to it.
I would say, for me, I remember watching this one that featured a lot of ECW stars, and I believe
right they had that big evasion
angle. Yeah, it was late 98.
International Slaughterhouse, I believe. It's FMW versus ECW. And, you know, you get Sabu there, you get Mike Awesome, Terry Funk, Sandman, the Dudleys. And not to say, you know, that's the reason you should be watching International. But, I mean, if you're familiar with a lot of the North American stars, it'll probably ease you.
There's a show where the WWF lent out Shawn Michaels to be a referee.
Yeah.
I think that was late 98, somewhere.
Yeah, it was
after
his injury.
There's the Best of Hayabusa DVD.
Oh, the Best of Hayabusa. Yeah, the Hayabusa story, I think it is.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, the feud with
Yeah, they go through his entire, like, it's a documentary about him with matches and things, too, and things like that. It's that style of edit that they used to do in that you also see. It almost reminds me a lot of the edits they did in Iron Chef. When they would tell the stories of the chefs before, like the original Iron Chef, when they would do the episode, they'd go to the chairman and he'd be like doing some sort of internal monologue about this ingredient, the red pepper, such a delicious fruit. And then he'd eat it. And he's like, who would be great for a red pepper? Oh, blah, 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 from blah, blah, blah in Japan. They are a master of the red pepper. And then they do like and they have like photographs of them, cut to interviews. Yeah. But just like the way it's put together reminds me a lot of FMW.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's the same production company. Oh, probably not.
No, it's totally that Japanese style where like I think if this was in Japanese, it probably seems like epic. But
yeah.
When you translate it to English, it's just so, it's still epic. Just very unique.
Very unique. Very, you know, Japanese, like, reminds me of the Japanorama tapes where people used to tape these videos of just Japanese commercials, old commercials, and you can just – we used to rent them at the video store, and you just watch, like, hours and hours of just Japanese commercials, which sounds terrible unless you've seen a Japanese commercial
awesome.
And you realize how amazing they are.
Silva.
Exactly.
Soap commercial.
Quentin Tarantino doing coffee commercials. Like, just – there's some incredible stuff in there. There's a game show where it's like a three-sided ring – that you're in that's floating on water and you're wearing
like a triangle.
Yeah, it's like it's a square, but just like there's no ropes on side and it's floating on water. And you're wrestling large presumably wrestler type people in there and you're wearing a fish diaper. Like a diaper that's just full of little fish and they push you into the water and then I guess it's a sea cow or some big, large, not life threatening ocean creature comes up and tries to eat the fish out of your diaper.
Fuck.
And so people screaming and this big things like
a commercial.
No, it's a TV show in Japan.
Oh,
it was on these Japanorama tapes too.
All right,
it's amazing Japanese TV. And every time I'm there, I never catch any of these amazing shows. I just seem to catch, you know, news reports or.
Aram Nasrallah wants to know. You performed at something called Christiania.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
How Pusher Street was.
Christiania is a 40-year-old squat in Copenhagen, Denmark. It was apparently it was an old military base that was squatted in the early 70s, I guess it would be. Late 70s? Late 70s, maybe. Anyway, they squatted this place – early 70s. They squat this place and they have a street there called Pusher Street, also called the Green Light District, which is where marijuana is – overlooked as being a crime.
Is it actually called Pusher Street, or is that what it's affectionately referred to?
That's what it's affectionately referred to. And it's a street where it's basically like a farmer's market for pot. But it's not like, you know, you're dealing with farmers. You're dealing with drug dealers. But they have all their wares out for view, and it feels like, you know, you're at, you know, Dufferin Grove for the farmer's market or something. There are some rules. No running. No running. And if you run, they all scream, no running, and they'll sick their dogs after you.
Holy shit.
No cameras, you know, no recording devices, nothing that looks like a camera. Our bass player, for some reason, she decided to figure out how much something was using a calculator on her iPod Touch. And they're like, no cell phone. She's like, oh, no, it's just an iPod Touch. Nothing that looks like a cell phone.
Wow. Screaming.
And apparently the number one rule is no hard drugs. And if they catch you selling hard drugs, they have a warehouse where someone –
What's their cutoff?
Anything but marijuana.
Okay.
Wow. Anything but – or hash and marijuana. Like nothing – yeah. And if you're caught, they will kill you in no uncertain terms. And the stories of what they've done to people they've caught – really vary. I heard they crucified a guy.
Whoa.
And then some people that I knew, they were like, if they catch you selling drugs, they will take you to a warehouse and there's a large man there and he will rape you and he will give you STDs. And I'm like, that is not true. That is the biggest load of bullshit I've ever heard. And then another person came up who didn't know.
Were you going to try and find out?
He's like, that is true. That is very true.
Holy shit.
And I'm like, I don't know. Wow. It doesn't seem true to me, but apparently that's what happens if you sell hard drugs.
We'll crucify you.
You will get destroyed. But it is a really awesome place. Copenhagen.
What a preface
to
that statement.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, if you don't fuck up, you're fine. But no, there's like incredible restaurants there, really neat cafes, a lot of artist studios, a free school for kids, like a cooperative school, local farming. One of the best restaurants in the world is right there, like considered one of the best restaurants in the world.
This sounds like the plot for like an Eli Roth movie.
It is definitely something that you would not see anywhere but in Europe. You know, for a North American person, like, it just seems so weird that there'd be something like this that's tolerated by the government, you know, because the government would not tolerate something like that. Even in Canada, they would not tolerate something like that. They didn't tolerate something. We had Rochdale, which was kind of the same concept, but it got fucked up by the – got raided and really shut down. And it was really crazy and people were getting killed. So maybe it was a better thing that got shut down. But like, you know, it's just, once again, I really enjoyed going there. I really think it was fun. And that's not just because I engage in pot. I think it was like a really neat place to kind of see.
So you hit Japan, Germany.
Yep.
Australia.
No, I haven't been to Australia. I'm going to Australia in a couple weeks.
Those are the Fozzy shows, right?
That's with Fozzy.
Yeah.
We did – but we did do Turkey, Finland, Holland. England.
This is since we last saw you this year. Holy shit.
That's
3 months.
Yeah.
Have you been home at all?
Oh, yeah, because it's actually like it seems like this has been a really long tour, but I was in each place. Like I was in Turkey for 12 hours. Maybe,
oh, okay.
And type thing. I was in Finland for 2 days, Germany for 1 day, Japan for 1 day. We did Japan to Australia the next morning.
Oh, he's growing.
Not Australia. Sorry. Austin, Texas, Australia.
He's so big now. God. We had to book Damien through his assistant. Yeah, you know exactly. The layers we have to go through now to get to this man? It's incredible.
My assistant is my lost cell phone now, which someone has. Someone found it outside my house last night.
We made the jump away. We now have his home phone number.
Yeah. Oh, good. You guys can call me at home anytime and leave a message on the machine that I will forget to check.
The Damien Abraham phone message at home. I wonder what it sounds like.
I think it's Lauren does it. My wife. So, who actually could be my manager/assistant?
It's always good to have.
She is the one that keeps me from forgetting everything.
Well, we have forgotten to talk about XPW.
I know. We're like, how long are we in? This is, I think, might be the longest.
We're at 40 minutes.
It was the longest preamble before the show start that you guys have ever done.
It would have been with you. I can guarantee.
You think it was?
We've actually.
I've seen you guys do some crazy ones.
Actually,
too.
There was a show a few weeks ago we did because Agnew told me that he got on the subway from his house in Mississauga, came downtown, and by the time he had gotten to his destination, we still hadn't got into the impact review.
He got home even. Like he went home and listened to the podcast. By the time he got home, we still hadn't started. So.
I've never once complained. Like that your podcast is too long, though. Like I've never been like, oh, God, oh, it's too long. So.
Yeah, well, you're not obligated to sit in front of a screen.
Well, and also,
or
like, I don't know,
speaker, right?
People, like, it's like people talking and you're just listening. I don't think it's as challenging as, like, sitting through a super long movie where you have to focus on.
Right.
Yeah. I think there's people that really enjoy it, that have lots of stuff to do, that it's good to have something on. So I never worry about length too much. But at the same time, I also look at people that they can skip through all this just to our review if that's what they want to hear. And then you get that chunk. Because I find with some podcasts, too, when, like, I listen to so many that I listen to a lot less Joe Rogan now just because of the sheer length. And I'm someone that I hate stopping a show without finishing it. I like to listen from start to finish and know that I, like, whether it's reading a book or listening to a podcast, I have to listen to the whole thing. But that's me. I'm weird like that.
Yeah. I listen to the Conan show the whole way through, MLW and Conan.
As do
up.
I. Love
that. It's
podcast.
A great show.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
One day I want Way to be on their show. I would love to hear Way Ting. Go on.
God. Boom.
XPW. What,
yes.
With most of your reviews, we always have to ask, what spurred on XPW? Where did you find your love for XPW? Because you brought this up in the past.
Well, yeah, I found a love. The reason I picked it is because you were like, we were talking, and you're like, do you want to come on? I'm like, I'd love to come back on. You're like, what would you like to do? Would you like to do this or that? And I'm like, I had heard that you guys on the show had been like, oh, people want us to do on the message board XPW. And it was kind of like just something you said on the side. And I'm like, oh, what a funny thing to review. Because it's like, once again, it's like a weird thing. It's a really bizarre wrestling federation from a really bizarre time in wrestling. And once again, the way I got into wrestling, I was, you know, a casual viewer kind of, you know, off and on my whole life. But then in my mid-20s, when I was working at this video store, I was working with a guy there who loved wrestling, and he would bring in these tapes. And so that would have been in 2002. So he brought in XPW tapes, and I actually saw all these XPW shows because he had a friend that had an illegal, crazy illegal satellite setup so it could get all the XPW shows, and had been taping them for him for the years up to that. So we would watch all these XPW tapes, and so I can truly say I've seen a lot of extreme things. And back then I was watching a lot of extreme things, you know, wrestling, like FMW stuff, movies, like horrific movies, movies that I could not sit through now, like, oh God, August Underground, Flower of Flesh and Blood, like the horrific Japanese movies and just terrible stuff. This to me is still one of the few things that I've ever had to turn off during a viewing and be like, I can't watch this right now.
I'm fairly certain in the early days of the Fight Network, someone did try to sell us XPW and they were just flat turned down because of content.
It's
like,
crazy.
We could never run this.
There is some stuff on this show that and now, once again, I'm being a parent, I think I'm a little more sensitive than I used to be, being a little older. But there's still stuff on this that I'm like, I can't believe they did that. Like, I just can't. Why? Who is this meant to appeal to? And you hear, it's really disturbing on this show when you can hear the audience and you're like, you hear them yelling at women, whore, whore. And you're just like, oh, this is so bleak and dark. And the craziest thing is in these two episodes, you get a taste of how depraved this federation is. But there's levels that they sunk to. That,
right, yeah. I was going to say, these two episodes, they weren't anything too crazy.
No, there's that one that Misty – no, is it Misty? No, not Misty Hyatt, but
– Lizzie Borden?
When Lizzie Borden's confronting that one girl at the end of the second episode.
Which all episode long.
Episode as being the hottest. And oh, we get to that. We'll get to it. But there's just a certain
slow
moment
build
where it's just like, oh –
I think that their most controversial angle was they once promoted that they were going to murder a dog in the arena, and they ended up getting a lawsuit filed against them for, like, animal cruelty. And I don't know all the specifics, but they were going to, like, I don't know, like, electrocute a dog or do something ridiculous with an animal.
Yeah, there's that. There's another one that I saw where they, like, did some home invasion thing with a gun and punched.
In fairness, WWF.
No, exactly. They've done that too.
There was a home invasion where, like, the guy was defending himself.
I think this wound up with one of the porn star women getting punched in the face, like full on smashed in the face type thing. I remember also they invaded ECW one time, XPW and ECW.
Yeah, that was Heatwave 2000 where they showed up in LA.
And they all
– And it led to a legit fight in the parking lot.
Then they clear the dressing room clear and everyone breaks kayfabe and – is, like, taking up ranks and sides and stuff. New Jack killing, trying to kill Supreme. Trying to, like, was it Supreme that he tried to kill? Where he threw him off the scaffolding? You ever seen that? Who was the one that, remember New Jack, the infamous one where
he did one with Vic Grimes, I remember.
Oh, Grimes, and Grimes fell on his head and cracked his head open. Sorry, it's Vic Grimes.
Another
and
then, pay-per-view
then
moment.
And then he gave him the receipt in XPW where he literally, you can see him tase him with a stun gun, pick him up, and then try and throw him in such a way that he misses all the tables that are there to break his fall. Jesus. And so he'll free fall onto the arena floor. But luckily for Frank Grimes, his legs catch the ropes. And he just broke some bones instead of dying.
So the man behind this promotion is Rob Black. Yeah. Real name Rob Zaccheri. And he was the husband of Lizzie Borden. Some of his obscenity lawsuits against him. The filming of Lizzie Borden's movie Forced Entry, which included several simulated rapes, was covered in the PBS Frontline documentary American Porn. The makers of the documentary were repulsed and walked off the set. The filming of the movie was also part of a documentary produced for the BBC Two host by Louis Theroux.
Oh, yes.
From Louis' Weekend.
Yeah.
Which follows various figures of the porn industry. Anyway.
Raided
by federal agents and were indicted for distributing obscene pornographic materials. The case is United States versus Extreme Associates.
He was kind of like – he actually is like the last one.
The shock
of,
porn.
But just before the internet made all this kind of obsolete, because now if you're into something really horrific, you will be able to find it. But this is like the last point where they still had, you know, sensors that could – that could stop the federal government getting involved, even though this was early 2000 when the internet was there. But it seems like he was sort of like the last in line of like Larry Flint type people that was, you know, being like, this is a civil liberties issue and a freedom of speech issue. And this will test any person's commitment to freedom of speech watching some of his movies. There's a great documentary on him from the Disinformation book series. They had a TV show for a while, and they did a, you know, they did an episode all about Rob Black's porn company and about, you know, the future of pornography and the future of sex and all this sorts of thing. Anyway, and a big critique against him and this wrestling promotion is that he was using this wrestling promotion to get kids into porn. What his critics would say.
Hmm.
I don't know whether or not you can believe that, but there definitely was some cross promotion involved, as a lot of these ring valets were porn stars.
I don't think you need wrestling to get kids in the porn.
No, it really seems like these are two natural things that kids will probably get into.
Yeah.
Extreme violence and porn.
Backyard porn. I wonder if that was ever a thing.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Sure it is, yeah. Not in the backyard. That'd be weird.
And I think Rob Black is just, you know, his porn stuff is also just, it really is the extreme of extremes and things like that. And this wrestling federation was an extension of that sort of thing. They had a John Wayne Gacy based wrestler.
Yes.
Pogo the Clown, who came to the ring with young looking kids.
Wow.
The man who killed 33 young
Jesus.
Kids. Oh my God.
There was no line.
They would have a Benoit character if it was around now. I'm sure of it. I'm sure they'd have it like a Benoit character.
And as much as we, you know, can criticize, there was certainly an audience for this
in
California. That, you know, there was ECW, and then this company thought, well, we can go so much further than ECW can. We don't have a national TV contract to abide by. Fuck sponsors. We have a company that's going to absorb losses here. And this is really a company that you watch it, and it is from, like, wrestling fans that simply don't even really follow wrestling that much, but like to watch extreme shit. And let's build a whole promotion around this, and we can do whatever we want here.
But it's also, this is like a, this also comes at a weird time before now where you have, you know, once again, a very controversial thing, but the Kings of the Deathmatch, CZW style deathmatch wrestling, which is like a very, very established thing. This is almost like a prior to that, but a more extreme version of ECW, incorporating things that would go on. Like it's a transitional federation. You still have sort of these older people that had worked in WCW coming in, and then you have people doing thumbtack matches at the same time.
So basically, we had been sent the first two seasons of this on DVD. I had never opened it up prior to this, and this was I remember way when we were going to Montreal, I said, hey, I've got XPW season one we could watch there and do a review on, or we have The Backyard.
Oh, yeah, that's where it came up, and I was
and
like,
and we picked The Backyard.
You made the better choice. I love The Backyard. I love that movie.
Yeah, had you seen it before?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I loved your review of it, but I saw it. There was that one, and then I don't know if you guys also remember, at the same time The Backyard came out, there was a company that was marketing backyard wrestling tapes where it was like kids would send in
their own
footage.
And I think Matt Cross was one of the guys that one of his clips that got used and it was a big selling
I'm sure they sold tons and we used to have them at Suspect, so we'd put them on in the store. And like, if you ever wanted to see a 15-year-old get a face full of thumbtacks, those are the DVDs to watch.
And, I mean, you can always count on people having a morbid curiosity to watch stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Like, if I say, hey, I've got a tape here where a guy's going to jump off a roof and dive into thumbtacks and get eaten by a dog, people will watch that.
People will watch. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
All right, well, let's start off. This was episode one, our beginning of XPW.
And it was a really weird, cold open. Like, I was like, am I DVD screwing up?
Yeah, it was like they taped their big shows, like, I guess once a month or something at the LA Sports Arena, and then cut them into episodic shows. So we saw tons of overlap and replays and just constant.
How long had XPW been in existence before the show?
They started in like 99, and this would have been I don't know when exactly.
I think this is 2000. The water, the 2000. Copyright at the end of 2000. So
I think it's like a year into the show.
Yeah.
So really, at least these first two shows seem like they were trying to educate the audience about what
they've been running live events, and then they were making the jump to TV here, and they had a television in California, and I don't know if any other markets as well, and they had highlights of Chris Candido and Damian Steele for the XPW title, where they just showed basically brief highlights, ending with Chris Candido drinking from a bottle of alcohol and then dropping an elbow in the crowd and pinning Damian Steele. So we've established Chris Candido kind of the focal point here.
We didn't actually see the pin, though. It was one, two, and then a quick cut.
Cut away.
Well, a few assumptions need to be made. Way.
Also, Damian Steele is the biggest Triple H ripoff.
I had never heard of this guy.
I've never heard of. That's the other thing is like, with the exception of Kronos and Supreme, I don't think I never heard of any of these people. And Big Dick Dudley, obviously, and stuff like
Shane
that.
Douglas.
And Candido and Douglas. But most of the other sort of people that keep coming up, I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Like, where else did this dude work? I've never heard of this person.
So from there, the editing was
atrocious,
very elementary.
They would cut off the announcers at times, too.
There were horrible cuts and just very glaring cuts that were just really tough to get through. I actually had a headache after the first episode from some of this. They cut to Shane Douglas appearing in the ring, and he was with WCW at this point, and congratulates Candido, who was with Tammy Sitch, who had recently left WCW. They got a brief run, and Tammy Sitch didn't quite endear herself and was a mess backstage in WCW. They did not last too long. There were chants of fuck WCW from the audience, and Shane Douglas proceeds to tell Kevin Sullivan to fuck off. So I would imagine this was taking place right around the time that Sullivan was booking briefly between Russo periods, and Shane Douglas was at one point hoping to jump with the Radicals, but they basically left him out because WWF had no interest in bringing back Shane Douglas. He tells Kevin Sullivan to fuck off, brings up the fact that WCW is down 60% in the ratings. Once again, this man is still contracted to this company. Bashes Hulk Hogan and Dick Flair, who says, won't turn ratings around. Why XPW felt, well, this is how we want to start off our show. Calls Bill Bush, who I guarantee you not more than 10% of this audience would have known, a Barney Fife lookalike, and he's not afraid of legal battles and will take millions of their dollars and come back to XPW and put it on his back like he did for ECW to make XPW a player in the sport, and then goes back to what ratings is Hulk Hogan drawing lately? Because Hulk Hogan can suck his dick, and he's a caricature from the 80s who sucked then and sucks now.
I hated this Shane Douglas era promo.
The shoot promo, Shane
but
Douglas.
Like, but it's like also his delivery is like Andrew Dice Clay. Like, and then this, and then that, and then that, and then that. And,
Hello.
And it's just like, why would you want this on your show? Like, I don't see how it helps you. It's like,
why not, though? You want to start off your show setting the tone, and what better way to do it than with somebody coming out there to criticize your competition?
Yeah, but I think if I were them, my competition would have been ECW. And, like, when they went after ECW, that made sense. Like, WCW?
But ECW is beloved. WCW is an easy target.
That's true, especially at this point.
I think I'm also watching it now where I find the work shoot promo so exhausted and like tired of it. And it's hard to say at this time, you know, if this was something that, you know, maybe people were interested in hearing. But to me, this was just, you know, Shane Douglas trying to basically turn back time to when he started this, when it was novel in 94.
Yeah.
Basically doing the identical promo and character he did in ECW and now simply putting the letters XPW over top of ECW. Yeah. That's what this felt like. Candido and Sitch were just standing in the ring as he cut this promo. And I don't know if they were what they were doing, but they started lying down like they were bored. They very well could have been loaded.
Candido was pretending to be just so floored.
They kept falling down. Yeah.
Well, I thought they were falling asleep.
It could have been.
Then we went into the show opening, which, in no specific order, included cameos from Ron Jeremy, a woman rubbing her vagina, two guys hanging another man.
That's Lizzie Borden. Wasn't that Lizzie Borden rubbing her vagina in that part?
I don't know. Okay. Didn't catch the face. Two guys, because they didn't shoot her face.
Oh, that's what they all say, John.
Well, believe me.
Hey, you're a married man, man. Watch those eyes.
In the face a lot.
You beat me to it, Way. Two guys hanging another man and a suplex onto a shopping cart.
Did you get Jonathan Davies from Korn?
Yeah.
No, I missed that.
And he was there, too.
He's reading off a piece of paper.
He's probably was dating one of the porn stars, and she's like, can you come to work with me and do this thing? And he's like, oh, Christ, okay.
And then we meet our announcers, Chris Kloss and my favorite, Larry Rivera.
I think anyone that hates Booker T, that new dude on Ring of Honor, Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole during his heel run, needs to sit through these dudes.
Larry Rivera and Joey Styles Kloss welcomes us as they're building up to their next big show, And Then There Were Four, which he did give the date here, April 15th of 2000, to give you a time period of what was going on this time. So, yeah, it would have been, I remember Russo and Bischoff. That was the infamous April 10th edition of Nitro. They returned. So this is probably taped during the Sullivan booking period.
Were these two the commentators throughout the whole show?
Oh, yes.
So the guy doing the high-pitched Joey Styles impression?
That would be Chris Kloss.
Oh, wow. Fuck. Okay.
It's so bad. Like,
there's nothing worse than Joey Styles knockoff announcers.
But like, then eventually you just go to like a silly voice. Like, it wasn't even like he was excited anymore.
There are levels that an announcer goes to. Like, you know, you might see like Jim Ross start off at maybe like a 5. At the go home of a Raw, he's probably at a 10. This guy, Chris Kloss, he's at 16.
Yeah.
The entire show.
And he did this stupid shit where he talked normally for some of these throws. With this horrendous green screen behind him. But then he would always make sure his last word had this stupid announcer. We're going to go to the women.
Yeah.
It was just like, God,
he's going to make her bitch.
Her bitch. Yeah, well, he was doing it with Vince McMahon.
He was doing everything here but entertaining.
But these guys are, I think, my least favorite announcer in the history of calling any sport.
They explained that Candido won the title and then showed up on WCW a few weeks later and is holding the XPW title hostage.
The best is when they talk about these wrestlers, because they also talk about Big Dick Dudley also holding a belt hostage at one point.
Yeah, we didn't have contracts with these guys that were binding.
And they're definitely
they have other offers.
And it's not like they're going to take it out on Nitro and throw the XPW title in the trash or anything. It's sitting in the locker. It's with them, not being used at all.
He took it hostage and it's now on eBay.
He took it hostage and forgot he had it in his trunk for 2 weeks as he drove around.
We go to the boss's wife, Lizzie porn star Borden, no relation to Steve Borden, who is
but named after Lizzie Borden, the axe murderer.
Yes. Laying down the show for us and tells the audience, are you ready for some TNA?
I love that part.
And even 2 years before, no one was ready for TNA.
Yeah, wrong show.
Calls Candido a sellout and calls Candido and his tramp out, to which Candido responds and comes out to chants of you sold out, says he did not sell out, and he won't give the title back, and he is not getting a title match to anyone. And if there's something you know about it, it's screw you. I don't know if this man was coherent here during this promo.
So from there, we go from a promo with Candido to Shane Douglas, who's in the ring all of a sudden with Borden, and gets everyone to admit that Candido is a great wrestler. It jump cuts as Douglas is talking him into defending the title tonight, to which Candido does a 180 and says, okay, I'll defend my title tonight. Douglas whispers something to him, and he agrees that he'll do it on his terms, and he will do so against homeless Jimmy tonight. I was so lost here. Like, it was like everyone was on different pages here, and I didn't know what was going on. Candido came out with a point to make that he's not giving a title match to anyone, and then had a sweet nothing whispered to him and agreed to.
It didn't help that they didn't have a line into the cameras as well, so the audio was just picked up.
The audio's so rough.
It's so hard to hear.
And that's what I was wondering, if that's like why. Because, like, you could tell, like, the concept they had in mind must have been like, oh, we're going to, like, I will chat Chris Candido into accepting this match. But it just came across like guys trying to yell so the audience could hear them. Mm. So there's no subtlety at all.
What did you guys think of, I don't know if this continued, but the matches being put in highlight form.
Then did you know you could watch the full match if you go to the bonus features on Interdisc?
Didn't bother.
I watched them. You could stick with the highlights, especially for some like this. Yeah. Like, do you really
a
need
a shitty wrestler?
Well, especially when you get to the death match. So, like, Chris Candido obviously was a great wrestler, you know, and fun to watch. But yeah, you really need transition moves in a death match. Like, you're not really there to see the fake punches.
Plus, keep in mind this is their first episode, or at least first series of shows. And really, what are you trying to do when you're trying to introduce your product to a new audience? Just You need a quick way to explain storylines and just show crazy shit. Honestly, like, for hardcore wrestling, I think it plays out very well in highlight form, where it's like a Jackass video where you're just seeing crazy stunt after crazy stunt.
Yeah.
So we just saw the highlights here. It was a lot of garbage can lid shots. No regards for the head during this whole thing, so I'm not going to speak on it once.
These are some of the softer headshots that, like, compared to some of the ones that come up in later matches.
I watched this, and right afterwards, I watched this documentary on Netflix called Head Games with Chris Nowinski is in it, interviewed. And boy, did I think even less of some of these performers after watching that. Just dumb
stuff.
Hey,
this is the wrong thing to watch right after Head Games.
I watched this before.
Oh.
I got myself all ready for head games.
Yeah, I guess so.
Maybe kendo sticks don't cause brain injuries, though.
Yeah, maybe
they're designed
not.
In such a way to avoid brain injuries.
We saw a delayed vertical suplex by Chris Candido. A pile driver was even used in this, and Candido ended up winning with a chain shot to pin Homeless Jimmy.
Homeless Jimmy, what's that?
He was a homeless guy. That was his gimmick, that he was like the homeless guy that was really good at wrestling, and he would come to the ring with like a shopping cart.
We would get a whole backstory on Homeless Jimmy later, including vignettes.
Was that
Homeless Jimmy? No, that's White Trash.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm mixing them up. You're right. Sorry, yeah, Johnny Webb.
I would also get confused watching the two of them too. Yeah.
Sorry,
similar gimmicks.
I mixed up Homeless and White Trash. There is a difference.
I think Homeless is meant to be more lovable.
Yes.
In his destitution,
White Trash,
you're meant to scorn for the fact that he's poor.
Kloss and Rivera are back on the green screen recapping the match and the double cross that took place with the question, who screwed who? And then Rivera hyped up what is to come. This match is brutality at its most brutal. Which would be a tagline for him on a number of these hardcore matches.
Where was the double cross?
Well, Chris Candido won the title. I don't know.
Oh, no, because there is a double cross in this one. I'm trying to remember it now.
Homeless Jimmy versus Chris Candido.
Yeah, but then Homeless Jimmy gets double-crossed by, like, Lizzie Borden, maybe?
Okay.
Oh, no, Shane Douglas double-crosses. Remember Shane Douglas tries to...
The point is, we hadn't seen this yet when they started talking about the double-cross.
This was not in the highlight pack.
Well, because this is so famous. This is like the Montreal screw job. Like, this is like,
oh, really?
You know, the curtain call. Like, these are just these incidences that burned into our memories. So when they say the Homeless Jimmy double-cross with Chris Candido, we're like, oh, of course. I remember where I was when I heard about that.
Yeah. Well, for those of you with questions, we then got a non-waiting approved XPW video package. Something way you would never...
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Would you ever put your name on this video package? This was terrible.
Maybe not. But, I mean, hey,
it's a short video. Explaining.
It was not short, Way. It was fucking long. It was so goddamn long. And I don't know what if you had this problem, but I couldn't fast forward on this fucking DVD.
Yeah, fast forward didn't work on mine either, too.
Really?
Yeah. I was watching on a Blu-ray player.
This is very important.
These are DVD distributors. They know what they're doing here.
Yeah, exactly.
So it dates back to July of 99 when the promotion debuted. So there's our answer. Then they had a Halloween show for the title featuring Big Dick Dudley and Damian Steele in a cage match where Steele formed his group The Hierarchy featuring John Cronus, Nicole Bass.
Who's and China? Nicole Bass is just China.
Yes, who I had just seen. I watched Howard Stern's movie last week, which also
featured. Oh, she's in that?
She does. They break up the chapters with people holding up signs of the new city he goes to, and Nicole Bass was used as one of them. And anyway, Nicole Bass is part of the group, and the voiceover here, I've got to say, it sounds a lot like you, Damien, this voiceover.
Oh, really?
I'm going to play some of it right now. Okay. I'm like, God, this sounds a lot like Damien. It made me actually think. I was like, maybe this is why he wanted us to review this.
Yeah, like, you guys don't know, before I started playing in the band, I had a really successful career as
a
the
VO
dude
gig.
That vision voiceover
XCW's
for XCW.
Chris Kloss.
We were too harsh on him.
Yeah, exactly.
It was Damien with long hair and it was dyed blonde.
No, I'm the fake Latino dude.
Damien Rivera. Then they had a Royal Rumble match, but not – it was an XPW Royal Rumble where it's surrounded by tables if you get eliminated with weapons, where the Hierarchy attacks homeless – Johnny Webb, white trash Johnny Webb, and the henchmen eliminate themselves. But John Cronus, his henchman, is not willing to eliminate himself, and Steele still wins. So very valiant babyface turn here, the babyface that fails on his first babyface attempt. Dudley ends up getting the match while he's still blind and handcuffed. Cronus makes a save. He loses the title to Dick Dudley, and some here I have written stripped by Lizzie Borden. Okay,
Dick Dudley gets
figuratively
stripped
here because we did have literal stripping later.
Well, she literally gets stripped because Dick Dudley had to be stripped. Like, there's so much overlapping in all these that they like.
Now I get it.
You're like, oh, that would have made much more sense if they had left that with the video package about that incident.
So Dick Dudley is stripped of the title because he is an ex-con, and we never saw Big Dick again.
And I'm sure he was the only ex-con in that locker room ever.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no one else, including the owner of the company.
So based on this video, the title had been stripped from Dick Dudley. Then we go back to the present where Candido is the champion and Damian Steele is in the ring arguing with him. I was so confused here on this title situation. Another guy, part of the Hierarchy, ends up agreeing to a match here, and it leads to Sitch and Lizzie Borden having a cat fight. I was so lost here of who was champion at this point in time.
Yeah,
it's very hard to follow. Absolutely.
We got a commercial break here, a much-needed commercial break, where we come back with Supreme in the ring, and this was our hardcore chapter, where basically it's built around Supreme, Axel Rotten, John Cronus, and basically a King of the Deathmatch tournament, which we would get highlights later of, involving the likes of the Messiah and other members.
In episode 2, you get the highlights from this whole thing they talk about in episode 1. Like, that was like the weird thing about it. It's just, it was like, it kept going back and forth, you know?
You can't show everything.
Yeah, that's true.
This was just highlights of a three-way feud here with a very heavy John Cronus, Supreme, and Axel. And then we saw King of the Death match was discussed here, including a no-rope, barbed wire, bed of everything match, which featured panes of glass, light bulbs, thumbtacks, barbed wire, where Supreme was Irish whipped into the barbed wire ropes and went through the barbed wire, landing on the floor.
Looks
like a very pleasant bump to take.
Because they have all these highlights in the second episode from this one, and you do see him take that, and it looks... like, I don't even know, were they expecting the barbed wire to support his weight, and he just broke through
it? And
like,
no mats on the floor either. No cushion the fall with the barbed
wire.
When
you're dealing with bumps into beds of thumbtacks, I don't think that's main concern.
Supreme at one point jumped off a balcony and missed everybody.
That spot is awesome looking, too.
And then got pinned by Axel Rotten.
Now, you know, having seen a lot of hardcore matches, certainly we make fun, but there is a quality level of hardcore matches out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like those Japanese FMW matches. Like, you watch Terry Funk versus Cactus Jack. Mm-hmm. It's a
And how would you rate, you know, some of these King of the Death
not
matches?
This
sloppy,
not that,
no. Dangerous.
I will say this,
shitty.
Not in this episode, but in the second episode, the Messiah was the person that really surprised me. He's like, he because like a lot of these guys, and I'm not blaming them for this. When they take one of those insane bumps, they're anytime they're working between those spots, you can tell they're just working to get to the next spot. Messiah was the one guy that I'm like, I actually believed him as a character.
Hmm. This guy's the second coming.
I was like, he is the second coming.
He's the son of God.
Of Ric Flair. I thought he was fantastic. But everyone else, you're right. Like, it's not, it certainly is not Necro Butcher, Samoa Joe, or anything close to that.
The use of this TV show is really to build people to come to the shows, and they're plugging Supreme against Axl Rotten at their show coming up in L.A., to which Rivera says, "This isn't Japan or Vietnam. This is where wrestling was born, because it says wrestling on the marquee." On the marquee.
These announcers also, like, I don't know, Wade, if you watched a lot of the later ones, you probably saw, you've seen some of them.
I have not.
They became worse. They become
right?
way worse. If you watch the Vic Grimes New Jack one where he throws them off, it's like it like because they both start doing the Joey Styles,
okay.
Eventually, like the frantic
accent.
Yeah, well, he's doing it with the accent too, but they're both like doing the manic.
I read that this guy Rivera he was doing a gimmick where he hated hardcore wrestling and he wanted like really like.
The guy who pimps out the this is the brutal of the most brutality.
He must have forgotten in these episodes that was his character. Huh. Like, we can't retake this.
This is early. The character progression.
Yeah, the character progression. That's true.
Then
he was Don West before Don West.
Oh, I'd take Don West any day over this.
I would definitely take Don West every day over this.
There was a profile next on Lizzie Borden, who started off as the cleanup girl who would come out in provocative clothing to wipe the stage with a rag, and this started a feud with referee, I guess senior referee, Patrick Hernandez, who didn't approve of her, was sick of her acting like a whore, as he says so in a promo, and she gets on her knees, and the crowd gets excited that we might see a blowjob in the ring, but instead, she gave a blow low. And then a DDT... to which Hernandez comes back and shoves her. And then in a future angle, she comes back, stuns Hernandez, and basically Hernandez becomes this corrupt referee. And eventually Borden becomes this authority figure, somehow turns heel in all of this.
She got a date with the CEO of XPW, and in the meantime, they got married.
Wow, look at that romantic angle here. Yeah. And then she got power hungry.
But I don't think does she turn heel, or is she still the baby face?
I was confused.
Because that's the thing, like, I'm like, oh, did she turn heel, or is she still just
well,
bad?
She announced her engagement against Missy Hyatt, who you would assume was a baby face.
That happened in this show?
Yeah.
I didn't.
No. She just tells that she actually is married. She doesn't even say her engagement.
Oh, I heard her say that she's married.
I'm married to the boss.
Then announcers are like, we knew it.
Right, but it seemed like even Missy Hyatt, like the audience was booing her as she got fired.
Yeah, they built to this feud between Borden and Missy Hyatt where, she reveals herself as the owner's wife and she's hired Chastity as her assistant. Everyone remembers Chastity.
Who was Chastity? I was trying to remember Chastity.
She was the Sandman's valet in ECW.
Yeah.
And then also came over to WCW, where I believe she was let go when she popped up in a porno film that WCW was not aware of. So that was a Chastity.
No, this is a perfect fit.
Yeah, XPW.
Yeah,
we'll
dream promotion.
We'll promote it for you.
Yeah.
She makes a match between Nicole Bass and Jasmine St. Clair, another ex-ECW porn actress and the ex-wife of the Blue Meanie.
Yeah, that she was.
And she's just a terrible promo, Lizzie Borden.
Yeah.
I thought she was a horrible talker.
Yeah.
Brings in Christy Mist to give her a lap dance, the circumstances of which are unknown.
Yeah, we don't know what's going on here. Just,
but then they explain it a little bit later. She this whole Christy Mist thing, they never really explain it. In the
who
second
is this
episode,
woman?
Christy Mist was Big Dick Dudley's valet.
Oh.
They never say this. I just inferred this from watching this. Like, and then I realized
was she a wrestling person or was she a porn star?
I think she's a porn.
She's a porn
person. And then so basically, Big Dick Dudley kicked out because he's a thing. And so to punish him, he makes her his valet, who seems to really enjoy it, give her a lap dance. And then she knocks the valet down. And then she would call it the valet the next week. And that's when we see all that stuff in
that's
the second episode.
That's when she decided to strip the valet.
After she stripped her guy from the title.
Very clever.
I know. And then she ends up dating her. They end up making out together.
Right.
Okay. Christy Mist, from Wikipedia, was working as a dental assistant in L.A. when she decided to get into the adult entertainment industry. She did a cover shoot for Hustler magazine and layouts for High Society and New Rave before making the jump into adult films in 95. Miss best known films include Buffy the Vampire Slayer, series of horror parodies, Buffy Down Under, from that series, produced by David Haynes, was the highest-selling Australian-produced adult film of all time. She was the 2001 AVN Award for Best Anal Sex Scene, video for a gangbang scene with urophagia in the film In the Days of Horror from Extreme Associates. Mist had broken down on the set and wanted to walk off the film and quit the business rather than complete her scene.
Oh, I could listen to John.
She was in 106 films.
I can listen to you read porn star Wikipedia pages.
This is like so dark. Like so like crying and wanting to leave the business on set.
In January of 2001, she left the industry to raise a child. In a 2005 interview, she described herself as a full-time mom and a fan of X-Men comic books.
Hey. Maybe we can get her on the podcast so I can talk about X-Men.
What does she say about her pro wrestling career?
There is actually nothing here on her wrestling career.
No, right up. Go up. Pro wrestling.
Oh! She made a move into pro wrestling by joining XPW 99 and feuded with Lizzie Borden. She was present for an incident which took place at ECW's Heatwave 2000 pay-per-view. Several XPW wrestlers attended the ECW event and an altercation ensued. Much of ECW's locker room ran to ringside to escort their XPW counterparts out of the building. Miss went on to become part of the Wrestling Vixens website with Tammy Lynn Sitch and Missy Hyatt in 2001. Well, good for her.
Wow.
You guys want background on anyone else?
Yeah,
let me
thanks,
know.
Sean.
I got the research machine here.
Yeah.
Once again, this is like another one of those storylines that, not that it would have been better served by telling you it in order, but it couldn't have been worse served by telling you in order.
I really don't think the point of this episode is to really make sure you knew at least if that was the point.
XPW is like a porn company. Like, everything between the sex scenes doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it's like everything between the actual bloody wrestling match does not matter.
That's really what I got out of this first episode. I mean, by the end of this episode, I felt like I had a good idea of all the faces. Not necessarily what the characters are, but who the
people were.
Who they look like. And it was just really a buffet of visual stimulus, whether it be people falling into a bed of nails or thumbtacks or a lap dance.
Badly lit. Badly mic'd stimulation.
Yes, exactly.
Horribly lit, horribly mic'd.
So this is some of the high points of XPW's early shows. Christy Mist is brought in for this lap dance, and this is where Borden gets up, tosses her away, and tells Christy, clean yourself up, and leads to a spot where Candido clotheslines both Jasmine St. Clair and Lizzie Borden. So he's the world champion for hire here to clothesline porn stars.
Mm-hmm.
This is the start of something big. This was how Hogan was originally to be booked.
I mean, this was clearly still playing off of the Attitude Era and the success of ECW. And it just, I think, you know, seeing a promotion like this is just seeing that winning formula back then, taken to excess.
Well, this is also still like during the boom. Like, how many bridges will you have had to have burned with three major wrestling promotions that this is where you wind up having to work? And Japan still going. And, you know, God knows what else was still pretty good back then, too.
Kloss and Rivera tease a lesbian scene for next week. And Rivera tells us that you will have to get a towel out for that one.
This should be Saturday morning main event.
I want to know what TV channels actually picked this show up.
Late night shit where they probably had to pay to get on, I am assuming.
Yeah, but even paying, like, what channels would allow?
Like, I don't understand why
you can get away with a lot.
Yeah, like,
cable.
And also wrestling channels draw, like, they would always have consistent audience, right? Like, can't imagine you'd get a lot of sponsors that'd be willing to put their name to this, but
How long were these shows? Like, because
I think they were an hour each.
Were they an hour? Because they were like cut down to 34 minutes or something. So I was trying to figure that
out
too.
Lots of commercials.
Lots of commercials. Yeah.
And yeah, the show ends with Douglas turning on Candido and hitting him with the Pittsburgh Plunge, and calls it a receipt for an ECW angle from 1999. And Candido teases that he has broken his neck and is stretchered out. Awesome. Our main angle is based off of an ECW one.
And he kept
a receipt.
He kept yelling, "That's a receipt. That's a receipt."
I hate this fake shoot shit. I just hate it. I'm really turned off by it. Anyway, with like all this inside shit. Oh, my God. But anyway, episode two. We didn't stop there, folks. Are you guys ready for episode two?
I think episode two was the stronger of the two episodes.
I'm ready. That's the classic gunshot versus knife wound argument. Would you rather? Kloss and Rivera start off the show plugging the matches from the LA Sports Arena, and Kloss does his weird delivery of Borden, and Rivera calls this the hottest footage on U.S. television today.
Yeah.
Yeah, this man is not telling the truth. Then we got the profile on Johnny Webb working on his car and says he's into fried chicken and ass-kicking. Says there's no shame in being white trash, needs to find a better job, and that's how he got into that pro wrestling stuff.
Have you ever seen that John Moxley Greatest Hits promo thing that you can watch on YouTube?
I have not.
It's like all, I think it's from Evolve, or maybe it's Chikara. No, it's not, because Chikara wears a mask, right? Yeah, Evolve, and it's like his promo as this junkie, like degenerate guy, and it's like so well done. And I literally just finished watching that before I watched the second episode of this. And just comparing that promo to this promo, it is shocking how different they are.
Well, we got to see Johnny Webb in the ring as he took on Phenomenal Phil.
This is also the worst Joey Styles of impression during this little segment. Mm-hmm.
The highlights of which, the footage had no sound on it.
I thought that was strange, and I wondered why that was. Perhaps they use like copywritten music,
or it's the audience being, "This is horrible," and then just like, we can't have that on the audio. They're better than TNA in that regard.
They also showed highlights. I'm confused here with Phenomenal Phil and Mr. 80s Dynamite D.
No.
Do I have this wrong?
It was a white trash Johnny Webb versus Mr. 80s Dynamite Deeb.
Who's Phenomenal Phil?
I don't know.
They did say Phenomenal Phil at one point, didn't they?
Yeah, I'm very confused.
I don't know. But all right. Mr. 80s Dynamite Deeb, is that his name?
I think it was Dynamite D.
Dynamite D. What an awesome heel gimmick for a hardcore wrestling promotion. Here's a guy who has like an 80s coiffed haircut. He dresses basically in regular trunks and boots, and you know, whereas everybody else is wearing T-shirts or whatnot. And he comes in here to tout the importance of Bruno Sammartino and guys like that.
Roddy Piper.
Roddy Piper.
And his finisher is a sleeper hold.
I think it would be kind of a cool gimmick in like a CZW to have a guy who comes in wearing MMA gloves, like MMA shorts, and he's like a, you know, like a Davey Richards style guy who just gets smashed in the face with toasters or whatever. But so that's like 80s could work. You know, you have an 80s guy who's kind of trying to put guys in holds, and all of a sudden they throw a bag of thumbtacks in their eyes.
I think it's hilarious.
He says if Piper were here, he would give D a reality check, which was Piper's gimmick at the time. He wore a shirt that said reality with a check mark underneath it. And Webb's finisher was the welfare check. And at the end of this match,
and he had a shirt that said
welfare with a check mark underneath.
Great. He introduces his new manager, Missy Hyatt, who comes out with a kendo stick and smoking a cigarette. How appealing.
She looked like Sandman.
She did look
She looked like she also had some work done. Like her lips were out of control. Uh-huh. Like it might have been some collagen.
Always a compliment when you say a woman looks like the Sandman. Then we got highlights of Dynamite D versus Webb. Kloss is doing his ridiculous Joey Styles knockoff call when Webb uses a foreign object during this hardcore match, ending with kendo shots to the head, and Webb pins D. And then Webb goes into this feud with Damian Steele over Webb thinking that he's a main eventer, and Steele doesn't feel he is a main eventer. He's hired that guy Hernandez as the referee, who's the heel ref. And then Hyatt begins her feud with Lizzie Borden with Chastity, and it led to Hyatt being fired, i.e. she was not happy with her payoff after show one, and Webb thus went into depression when he lost his manager and began to drink heavily. And they actually did a drinking and driving sketch here because he got so drunk and then started driving and crashes his car. This was below porn level acting.
I think it's amazing that they've got a plastic garbage can and a mop there that are obviously waiting to take this car bump from this car hitting him. And they can't even do that right. Like, they show they have to stop the car, and then he slowly bumps this plastic garbage can and mop to knock them over.
Webb is in an office meeting. He finally got his meeting with owner Rob Black to try and get Missy Hyatt rehired. He says no, he doesn't want old broads in the promotion. No more old. This was a painful segment.
Do you think this was meant to be a parody of that Seinfeld George Steinbrenner thing? Like, you never saw Rob Black's face. It's just his stupid dreadlocks and a cigar.
Well, they seem to want to conceal his face.
Yeah.
At least in this first episode. You would go on to see him in some
way. Yeah, absolutely. I think you even see him in this episode because there's one where they show Chris Candido being yelled at by him.
Right. Yeah.
So then Webb shows up drunk with a guitar to the ring and cuts a drunk promo on Rob Black and threatens to sing and attacks somebody and a referee with a guitar and kendo stick, to which a guy named Poncho comes out, and Webb is taken away by security and starts attacking himself with the kendo stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. What are we supposed to say? Like,
are you engaged with the character of Johnny Webb?
Hey, I do have to say, they made this look pretty intense, and I think if we saw this play out live, we'd probably have a better reaction, or like a better grasp of exactly how people responded.
I was trying to think what I would react if I was at a show. Yeah. Like,
I at least knew what this character was about after
the
TV show.
Yep.
He's a drunk who's lost his manager.
And at least he's sympathetic at this point, you know? He's a drunk who's lost the one
person. As much sympathy as drinking and driving can get.
Exactly. You know? He's a sympathetic character in the same way that, Mickey Rourke's character in Barfly is a sympathetic character.
Then we were introduced to our next character, where the voiceover says, "During the month of the birth of Christ, we were introduced to the Messiah." And they go to a shot. They actually designed a set here with candles at an altar with a cross.
That looks like one of those things that would come up on Fox 29, like, Fox 29 says, "Happy Holidays." And then they'd have that shot come up.
Do you ever watch Ring of Honor on Sunday nights?
Oh, my God. The commercials are incredible.
They are the highlight of that show.
Oh, incredible.
It's sometimes so good people make bad mistakes. I'm Sam Maislin, and I'm here to defend you.
The one that I think is awesome,
good people
though,
make bad mistakes.
That Jay Lethal one where he advertised that wrestling in
Gilio DiPaolo's.
I want to go to that restaurant. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
It's in Buffalo. I have not been there before. That would be a fun trip.
It looks like an awesome place to go.
We'll do it. We'll do a review away with Damian Rowe.
If we go to an ROH Buffalo show.
There you go. That should be it. There's the Scrapyard now with Michael Elgin. He endorses a Scrapyard to bring your metal.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
See, those are like, at least with the Jay Lethal one, that's a promotion that makes sense. I have never been like, I'm not going to be watching that and be like, well, I was going to get my muffler fixed at this place, but the Briscoe brothers are saying this other place is the best place. This is where they would go in North Tonawanda to get their mufflers fixed. So I might go to this place.
The best was up until a month ago, they were airing these promos at some place for autographs or whatever, where they had Rhett Titus and Kenny King holding their tag titles. A month ago, dude. Kenny King left in July. It was so embarrassing. Anyway, you got to watch these ads.
It's funny, too, because like Ring of Honor, you know, listening when Gabe was on the show talking to me, and he was like, they were always like kind of at the forefront of technology, and now it's like, because they're tied to a cable company, it's like so far removed from technology. It's almost like watching something that could have come out in the mid-90s. Like watching XPW.
Yeah.
But with much, much
Have you ever ordered
wrestling.
An iPay-per-view from anyone?
I ordered a Chikara iPay-per-view, but then I couldn't watch it because I was late getting home in time and I didn't watch the repeat. And I went to order one Ring of Honor one and it didn't work. It was one of the ones that didn't work. And then I've just never – it just
that
hasn't worked out.
Off.
I really – no, but I really do. I really do think this is going to be the way to go.
Are you going to watch the Tokyo Dome show?
I was thinking about it. But it's like 5 in the morning, right?
Yeah, but the thing is
– you can watch it all day.
It's it's up instantly after the show ends. So I'm not watching it live, but like you wake up at like, you know, it'll be done by like 10 a.m. and then 10:01 it's up and you can watch the whole thing.
If my friend has an Apple TV, can you watch it on the TV? Do you know?
I don't know. I'm not sure. You might be able to.
That'll be
I don't
like,
see why you wouldn't be able to.
Because those Roku boxes, I know Chikara has now an app and a couple of, I think, PWG also has one on Roku boxes, which
yeah,
is
yeah.
big, that's the big thing in the States now, right?
As you yeah, can, they're not available here, right?
I think you can get them, but they're illegal or gray market here still, but nowhere near what they are in the U.S.
I'm on Pusher Street.
Yeah, exactly, Pusher Street. I'll take an ounce of marijuana and a Roku box, please. Yeah,
we said nothing hard.
You're going to get so many STDs from this dude.
Or crucified like the Messiah.
Crucified.
So... the Messiah has been sent here from God to save the world. And Webb, Johnny Webb has hit rock bottom, so he's given himself to the Lord. This is my favorite storyline of the two episodes we watched. But the Messiah rejected him. The Lord does not want you. So this naturally leads to a hardcore match.
Yeah, no, I, you know what? And
winner gets into heaven.
We're making fun of this, but this is a million times better than the Cena-AJ storyline. I will take this, like if Cena... if AJ got fired and Cena went to
depression. AJ became an alcoholic?
Yeah, or like became a drunk, and then it was like the redemption by teaming up with this weird religious cult leader. Oh, imagine Cena did that and then joins up with CM Punk, who's still doing the cult leader role.
You get a metal version of her theme music to emphasize the darkness
of
her character.
How far she's fallen.
She doesn't skip anymore. She just like
nope. And now she dresses.
Limps.
Now she doesn't dress like an anime kid. She dresses like a goth kid.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, with like the contact lenses.
Or just like...
contact lenses.
Yeah, like those ones that make your eyes look weird.
Yeah, like the Rey Mysterio version.
Oh, okay.
There you go. This could be a great character for her.
I didn't have that face.
So Johnny Webb took his finish, the God Smack, which was a spinning TKO, and Messiah got the win. But Webb attacks him afterwards and ties him to the giant X for XPW at the front. No idea where they got this influence from. And attacks him with a kendo stick as he is
unable to make any
sort of... the mock exification here.
But any sort of block for a headshot. Like, there's no...
but I thought that was awesome to tie him into this X.
Oh, it looked awesome. It looked super cool.
Come
it was
on.
Kind of a rip off that Sandman...
oh, yeah.
This was a blatant
Raven thing.
The Raven.
But
deal.
I still think, like, it's just something about seeing someone's arms... held back and they're taking hair headshots with a kendo stick.
This is like, the Messiah, and they just conveniently had a cross on stage.
That's true. Well, then they always have that X. Because
yeah,
that X, there's
I mean.
Another one that I've seen, another match of theirs where it's the, what are they called? What was the original tag team in ECW? The two, like, homie guys.
Oh,
Public Enemy. Public Enemy was there and against the Pitbulls, I think, there too. And the X falls down accidentally.
Yeah,
it's one
yeah,
of them.
Yeah.
And it's like
they
not a spot
it in the highlight.
Yeah,
yeah,
a low light highlight.
They rematched in the deathmatch tournament with Webb winning after a sunset flip into thumbtacks, and then Messiah got a third match with him, and Webb was power bombed onto the thumbtacks. Webb hits the welfare check, a tornado DDT onto the tacks for the win, and then another post match attack, and they will have a cage match later.
Yeah.
So, match number four.
Which they also say, you will see it tonight. You will see this cage match tonight, and there's no cage match.
Yeah.
That
was funny,
I think so. That what they were meaning was this aired on Saturdays, and they're pushing it to the local audience.
Oh.
I think that is what they were doing, because
right.
I noticed that too. But I might be making an assumption. Klaus and Rivera reflect on the video package we've just seen, mentioning all the hardcore spots, and then just under their breath, not to mention an attempted crucifixion. Which I loved, because when the WWF did this, with The Undertaker, it was like, it wasn't a cross, it was a symbol,
yeah.
It wasn't a crucifixion. At least here, they're like, what we did was a crucifixion. Let's not fuck around here. We know exactly what we were trying to perpetuate here. Then they go into highlights of Supreme against... this was the highlights of all of the eight-man King of the Deathmatch
tournament. Yeah.
Supreme against Chaos, and I'll just run through some of the highlights of these just insane spots. There was a bed of nails spot, because this is the opening... round of the tournament. Let's start light. A bed of barbed wire. Supreme takes a Hurricane Rana into a bed of barbed wire on the floor, and it ends with Supreme hitting a moonsault onto the bed of barbed wire and pinning Chaos.
But Chaos was sandwiched between two sheets of wood covered in barbed wire.
Very nice.
Like a sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Then we had Webb and Messiah in a thumbtack ladder match, where Messiah got the win. Then John Cronus against Carlito Montana, where... He promised him, I will give you a skull fracture to remember, as Cronus grabs a bottle full of alcohol and hits him on top of the head.
And
I can't imagine how much that hurt, and doesn't even look that impressive.
I've broken bottles against my head a lot, and it hurts most when they don't break.
Oh.
It really, really, really hurts. And I think Cronus in this is the most reckless wrestler ever. Like, some of these moves where he's just, like, whipping dudes in the face as hard as he can, and, like, oh, it's just, like, it's brutal. There's one where later on where he's fighting the white trash dude, and he power bombs him off the top rope, and you just see the guy's head hit the mat. Just such force.
Fuck. He powerbombed Montana through a table to pin him. Then we had Axel Rotten and Homeless Jimmy in a bed of nails match. Jimmy just takes this sick chair shot and goes through glass for the finish. And then Messiah and Supreme.
This is the most disturbing match I've ever seen. This is the one when I saw it back in the day, I turned off.
Was this a thumbtack ladder match?
Yeah. No, this is the thumbtack. This is just the thumbtack match.
Bed of thumbtacks.
Where.
Just the thumbtack match.
Come on.
Where Supreme at one point gets thumbtacks in his head, and you can see they're right in there. So they would have had to have been pried out. And when I turned off. I made it through this sitting, but the first time I saw it, I had to turn it off.
I imagine when you watch this at home with your family around, you're watching this with headphones on.
This is watch when the kids are safely tucked in bed and the wife has said goodnight, and I'm all by myself to wallow in my shame.
So there was a leg drop where Supreme is draped on the ropes onto a bed of thumbtacks. Messiah takes a splash against a bed of nails. Messiah hits the cross factor, supposed to be mistaken with the X factor, onto a bed of tacks, no less. Then a reverse vertical onto a bed of tacks, and the finish was Supreme with a chair shot off the top onto Messiah, onto a bed of tacks, watched on chairs.
You forgot there's a face buster onto tacks, too. Like a face
buster. This is so ridiculous. Second round, John Cronus against Axel Rotten. Rotten takes a suplex through a bed of barbed wire as John Cronus wins. And then we have Cronus against Supreme in the finals. Supreme gets super kicked through a bed of glass. There's a step over toe hold onto a bed of tacks. The Irish whip spot we referenced earlier where Supreme goes through the barbed wire to the floor. A splash off a ladder through a table, and Supreme is your king of the death match. What an honor.
Totally kind of a weird off-topic thing, but have you heard that Axel Rotten thing on Cole Cabana's podcast?
I just listened to it.
Fantastic,
yeah, really interesting. This guy was, like, hooked on heroin.
And he comes off like a really good dude. Like, you're, like, watching. And so what's funny now, I don't think I'll ever watch a match by him in the same way. And, like, watching – I was thinking that after I listened to the podcast, now having watched a bunch of stuff with him, it's really weird watching that now, knowing how – much he abhors this style of wrestling. Like, he's really, he's like, you need to
stop doing
this.
Telling young guys, don't do this. This stuff is really fucking stupid.
He's like, it's so stupid. You'll regret it, blah, blah, blah. And it's funny, too, because it's, I think the deathmatch stuff now has become its own thing. Like, I think it's even removed from wrestling. Like, when you see some of this deathmatch stuff, it's like its own world. But it's funny watching him do these matches and then hearing him say, like, it wasn't worth it. Hmm. It wasn't worth it.
Well, what are some of the issues he has?
He just thinks it's like you're never going to get enough money to make it worth what you're doing to your body. Right. And he said it just like when he's talking about the scars that he has and just like just how hurt he got and all this kind of stuff and just how it didn't work and didn't help him in any way.
It's tough looking at some of those guys from that ECW locker room, and you look at them today, the ones that are alive, it's depressing.
Yeah, it's weird too because also they
– but not surprising either.
They weren't – but at the same time, those guys, you know, and he talks about in there in that podcast, like they weren't like – you know, soft living kind of people. They did hard living the whole time, you know, and it really, that combination of that and the extreme violence they were exposing themselves to must just destroy your body.
Mm. We go back to Kloss and Rivera, who are plugging the new VHS coming out entitled Baptized in Blood, which I am sure they were just like begging for like complaints from people and like anything and like playing off religion is an easy route to go.
Well, that like the religion thing, like having a woman come out and get down on all fours and scrub the floor, like, you know, and we're going to get to the most offensive part. So I'll wait till we get to the most
coming up. They tease Borden and Christy Mist. Coming up, providing your local provider didn't censor it, as Lizzie Borden makes Christy Mist
her bitch.
And the thing is, like, they also have been hyping it up that this is so sexy.
Yeah.
Is the other thing. Like, oh, it's so erotic. Like, like it's like some kid when you were in elementary school telling you about seeing Basic Instinct for the first time. Like, you won't believe it. And you're like, oh, my God, this is going to be crazy. But, like, that's what these guys are like. Like, two pubescent teenage boys talking about a rape.
We go to Nicole Bass and Jasmine St. Clair, who attack Christy Mist, and there's a recap of Lizzie Borden stripping Dudley of the title because he's the convict. Then she calls out Mist, gets her lap dance, which, how many times have we seen that? Three times?
Three
in two
times
episodes?
They've shown this, yeah.
Then Mist is in the ring saying that Dudley was in a car accident, and Borden says that he tried to run Chastity off the road, slaps her as Cronus holds her, to which Lizzie Borden calls her a two-bit whore, strips her, and Cronus then puts her over her knee and starts spanking her repeatedly. Not uncomfortable at all.
This was like, it was just so, seeing someone's arms held back while they have their clothes torn off and then laid over someone's knee while they're forcibly spanked, it's just like,
very degrading. It makes you sad. I think that's
really
the worst
does.
Emotion to have.
Very degrading. Hold on a second. We're talking in the context of this show.
But even in the context of
this was the lowest of
this
the
is
low
like,
me.
And I think this is also like, you know, like, you know, people talk about WWE, rightfully so, but like, it just shows you that there is depths that Vince will not sink to, that Rob Black is very happily to wallow in. And yeah, just seeing like
in fairness, this was a man who made a woman bark like a dog and did strip her.
That's true.
So I don't put any floor on any promoter. And it finishes with another Christy Mist promo where Dudley is not there. Borden shows up, says that Dudley is scared, and says Mist can either go to the back right now and get fucked by all the guys in the locker room, or you can be my bitch. This was an either-or proposition, and it led to the two making out, and then as the show is going off the air, Christy puts her hand down to effectively finger this woman as the show goes off the air. Welcome to XPW.
Yep.
It was like a DJ spinning a record at the end.
Yeah. Well, it certainly delivers on what to advertise. They certainly are extreme.
Yes.
The waiting synopsis.
You know, you put the show on late at night. I could see watching it, like, you know, on a Saturday night, coming home with your friends, you're drunk. Hey, there's this people falling through a bed of nails and
absolutely.
Chicks fingering each other. Yeah, put that on. There you go.
I think you know, people talk about garbage wrestling, and I know sometimes ECW, I've heard people say, oh, that's garbage wrestling. This is garbage wrestling. This is truly garbage wrestling. In every aspect of it is garbage. Like, they probably have a garbage program. You probably bought some garbage t-shirts, and they had garbage food for you to eat. But just everything about this is just like, yeah, it makes you feel bad. Like, you're watching this, you're like, feel really...
I didn't think it was that awful. Maybe my expectations were...
I just found it low-grade pro wrestling with, like...
But I wouldn't even classify this as really pro wrestling. To me, this is just a highlight pack of people doing insane shit, you know?
Yeah, like, but it's not... That's the thing, is if it was more insane, I think, like, that's why I find this one so much more disturbing than a deathmatch video, which is just, like, so insane, where you're like, oh, wow, this is just totally bizarre. Whereas this is, like... It feels familiar enough. It still uses the tropes that would be in WWF and WCW, but it's like, have you ever seen Meet the Feebles, that Peter Jackson movie where he's got, it's like meant to be the Muppets, but they're all like having sex and doing drugs and dying and all this sorts of stuff. This is like Meet the Feebles was to the Muppet Show to WWE or WWF at the time, where it's just like stuff that you kind of seems vaguely familiar, but
this is kind of like
disturbing.
If Stanley Kubrick went the wrestling direction, maybe we'd get some of this stuff.
I don't think so. I think if Rob Black went the wrestling direction, this is what we'd get.
So did you watch more XPW? Have you seen?
I've seen a lot. They have a ton of DVDs. Like they have After the Fall, which is all about when ECW, because basically eventually the floodgates get open, and when everyone's jumping ships to other promotions. They get all the ECW guys come in. And so I've got that DVD. There's a lot of, like, you know, interesting people on there, a lot of the ECW guys, kind of like, you know, tail ends of their prime type thing coming in. I've also just watched some of the more shocking, horrific stuff that they did later on, the Pogo the Clown things. They had a really offensive gay character in there, which I know is not...
Was it called the Hardcore Homo?
That could be it.
Hardcore Homo Angel.
That could probably be it.
I think that was it. That leads us to our feedback. And that we start off with Aram Nasrat. We didn't get a lot of feedback because I don't think a lot of people have seen these episodes. Extremely hard to find. The only reason we have them is because the DVDs were sent to us a number of years
ago. And also, if you are like myself and frequent department stores discount DVD cutout bins... You can probably find this for a dollar or two.
As a business, you really can't fault the fact that you know, they had all this distribution in place already for their porn side of things. And, I mean, they got these DVDs out. People were aware of XPW. I mean, the small little company out of California, they got a lot of word-of-mouth advertising for what it was.
I imagine, though, manufacturing-wise, you'd have all your ducks in the row from the porn side. But distribution,
like,
I think, would probably be – you'd have to – because I remember when we worked at the video store, the stuff that came from porn companies was very different than the stuff we got, you know, other – even, like, sports DVDs from.
If you got this DVD at your store, what section would you put it in?
Oh, we had a wrestling section. I made a wrestling section.
This wouldn't be like your 18 plus section.
No, it'd be in the wrestling section.
Anyone can pick up XPW.
There was wrestling in the 18 plus section. I don't know if you gentlemen I'm pretty assured that you have heard of it, but the apartment wrestling stuff.
Oh, yes.
Like in the 50s and 60s, guys, a big thing for wrestling, and they used to cover this in
Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated,
for this all the time.
And it was like guys would get women to come over and wrestle in their apartments, and guys would, you know, pay to go watch women wrestle.
The early S&M days.
And then, like, people would videotape this stuff too, and a big fetish is women wrestling from the 50s and 60s. Like,
oh, wow.
It's a big thing still. Yeah. And actually, I have friends
coming up on a review.
I know one person that was a wrestler, or two people who are wrestlers, and they were saying that a big thing is guys writing for custom videos.
Oh, yeah.
I want you to wrestle this person in this outfit, and
dream
I will
matches.
Give you this much money. Yeah, it's like a dream match, but, you know, everyone writes the same finish, I think.
And who are these female wrestlers? Are these like porn stars?
No, real wrestlers.
Oh, really?
Real wrestlers. Like,
one of the women in the Glow documentary got into that stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Apparently, it's a lot more around than you'd think.
So, like, does it still happen today?
Oh, absolutely.
With female wrestlers?
Some female wrestlers. I'm sure, like, many of them don't do it.
Right.
But, like, it subsidizes the income.
That's fascinating.
You know? And it's one of those things where I think, you know, once again, I don't know, and this is just from what I'm inferring, but I imagine it would be one of those things where you can you could probably convince yourself that it's not sexual, that this person just wants
apartment
to see.
Apartment Championship Wrestling.
Oh, there you go. Still going.
So there you go. It's alive and well here.
It's alive.
Right, right. Clip of the month. Finally, Tiffany Jones versus Taylor Wilson match released.
ECW. So, like, I mean, is there
look at that. She's going for an armbar there.
I wonder if they actually do, like, tiger drivers and stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if they do actually any wrestling moves. Okay, John's going to play a trailer here, right, for us at work.
Oh, this is like the tail of the tape.
Tiffany Jones versus Taylor Wilson is truly a David and Goliath.
Look at what tall she is.
At 6 feet tall, 165 pounds.
Holy shit. Look, she's laughing at her.
This is like Giant Gonzalez versus Rey Mysterio.
She got her back. Hooks in. She got one hook in. Holy shit. I wonder how she got out of that.
I wonder when you're officially out of the ring.
Oh. That's a very mean move.
She's trying to suffocate her with her tits.
Chop down that redwood. Look, they're into the covers now. Whoa! Oh, horrible. Fucking horrible. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. That is the funniest video I've ever seen.
We just gave unnecessary promotion to Apartment Championship.
I think we gave them the necessary promotion because you have to see that video if you're over 18. and have your parents' permission.
There was no restriction there.
If you're not at not at work.
that was no restriction. That was the craziest. Man, that was an amazing.
It's truly David versus Goliath.
It was like watching an FMW match. It was like, yeah, like Mike Awesome versus someone. Like
Masato Tanaka, Mike Awesome.
Oh, man. They're doing some roaring elbows and chair shots.
Oh, that's so good.
And I love that they have to take place inside an apartment.
Well it's got to be authentic way. Yeah. Yeah. It's like Vince Russo trying to take the wrestling ring out of a wrestling show. All right.
I was going to say, at one point, I think the apartment served a purpose. Now I just think it's part of the fetish, you know? At one point, it was just like, we can't really book this. MSG is not really the appropriate venue for this.
Very true.
That's awesome.
Okay, let's get to these feedback replies. Aram Nasrallah, I have some feedback for XPW. Don't know if it's from the early episodes, but I remember watching some, and this was 10 years ago. I like their gimmicks. Hardcore Homo Angel, Pogo the Clown, who was named after a serial killer, and lots more. But screw Rob Black and XPW for being a crazy teenager and getting excited to see a bout called a buck naked match and screwing me out of it. What the fuck, man? You don't see Vince and WWE not delivering what they advertise. They never lie, and they will always deliver, because Vince is all about pride and honor, who would never degrade anybody. Unlike the Yama pit fighting of pro wrestling, XPW and their thumb-cutting, filthy owner. I might be off with Vince being a good human being. Is there any chance you could do a podcast with Mark Pavlich? He seems funny and yells a lot. Okay, Mark Pavlich is the head of the Maximum Fighting Championship MMA organization out of Alberta, who's been on many has been on the MMA Report in the past. So that would be your show to listen to Mark Pavlich.
Can we touch on the thumb cutting?
I don't know what that means.
Okay, do you know about
no.
the gaming? Okay, well,
Please tell us why.
Messiah, in my research doing all this, but the Messiah was allegedly having an affair with Lizzie Borden in real life, not storyline. And
I do know
this.
This
would be after he had left the promotion.
Oh,
and so one day the Messiah was in his apartment and he was attacked by two men, and they ended up cutting one of his thumbs off.
Yeah,
and a lot of people believe that it was Rob Black who hired these two guys to do this.
I do remember that story when it happened.
I don't see it. I think that guy's such a stand-up dude, and I just can't see him doing that.
Oh, you can't.
I think he handles all his own situations himself. that's horrific.
Yeah,
that's
so horrible. It really is. Well, but he still wrestled after that. He's still wrestling today, I believe.
Where is he in now? Like, is he...
A bunch of independents. That's what I found, at least. I think he was in Combat Zone.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. I guess you'd stick in...
Natural crossover.
Yeah, you're not really getting called up to the... To the Fed.
No. We go to John from Hollywood, who says, I remember catching a few episodes of this back in the day, and as a fan of their crazy, violent tapes, I was ready to love it. Alas, the only thing that stands out was poor production values. I remember a match between Sabu and Abby that was so dark, the only way I could tell who was by the bright colors on their outfits. Maybe it was fantastic, and I'm recalling it incorrectly, but somehow I doubt it. Still, XPW gave us a lot. We had interesting and memorable characters, ranging from the guy who sweeps the ring, Jesus, a homeless guy, and a murdering clown child killer. There is also Rob Black's real life, which makes for some fascinating reading. Check out the PBS Frontline with his wife. Crazy stuff. They even produced a death match that I thought was 4.5 stars, along with these tapes to review. If you think XPW is crazy, y'all need to check out their likely inspiration, EWS. Witness the first tub of AIDS-infected syringes match.
Yeah, that's the Japanese Fed, right?
I don't know.
I've seen a Japanese AIDS match.
They did provide a video clip, so that's great.
I've seen a Japanese AIDS match.
The AIDS match, okay.
Yeah, it was like you got thrown.
Oh, this is 2 hours and 3 minutes.
Got thrown into a vat that was supposedly full of needles that were tainted with AIDS.
Wow. Well, at least blood. It's easy enough to work. How would you know if the guy?
Yeah, it's true. That's AIDS, right? We're waiting for the results.
Yeah.
Like, that is bleak.
And the last one's from Chris Levitt. I think XPW was, at times, an interesting test of how far you can push the envelope in wrestling. For example, in having the infamous Pogo the Clown vignettes. Wrestling often, I think, because of its liminal qualities, i.e. it straddles the divide between what's real and what isn't, is given stricter boundaries in terms of its content in a way that, for example, Dexter isn't. So my question for all three of you is, what evil character from pop culture would work in a pro wrestling setting if the company had no boundaries whatsoever? Welcome back, Damien. You are awesome.
Oh, thank you. Oh, wow. What
in pop culture?
Evil character? I don't feel there's any boundaries of a... character traits you can introduce to characters.
Well, in wrestling, I think the I think it's Razor Ramon's thing about how you can't say you're going to kill someone. And I think you have to be evil in a way that it's still believable for people. Like, you could have some guy like Pogo the Clown, like, no one's going to buy that dude's actually a serial killer. It's just going to be in bad taste. So, yeah.
Like, if I were to describe the Sinister Minister to most people and they have no reference point, that sounds ridiculous that it wouldn't work. But you had a guy that was so tuned into this character, cut these incredible promos, and he was an excellent character. Yeah, he was fantastic. Amazing. But if you were to put that on the wrong guy, it could come across really terrible.
Yeah, like, I guess the dude with the half face, I can't remember his name, and of course, half face is the most offensive thing you could call half him, face. From Boardwalk Empire. Did you guys watch that?
I don't watch Boardwalk Empire.
It's the best show on TV.
I just got Homeland on DVD.
Homeland, I've watched a couple episodes now. I like it, but I unfortunately saw that Saturday Night Live parody of it before I saw it.
No, I have not seen that.
The parody's pretty spot on.
Yeah.
Pretty spot on, but Boardwalk Empire is phenomenal. Like, first season is not the easiest thing to get through. Like, you know, it drags at times, but then the second and third are just the best shows on TV. But there's a guy who comes back from the First World War and he's missing half his face and has to wear like a really terrible looking prosthetic face on half his face, but he's like this, ultimate killer guy type thing. And I just think his character's brilliant. And he's also really compassionate. Like, that's the other thing. You want to have a villain where the motivations aren't just, like, crazy. Like, and it's good to have one or two crazy characters, but every character is just like, oh, you're just a mean jerk who's crazy. Like, that's, you know, like, it's good to have those characters where you're like, oh, like, what was that guy's name who was in WWE around September 11th and they got rid of the character around the London attacks?
Muhammad Hassan.
I thought his promos were phenomenal because I'm like, wow, he's talking about stuff that's very, like, I could see why someone would be upset about being mistreated for no reason other than the way they look. Like, I could totally understand his motivations.
He was supposed to be a bad guy.
And he was a bad guy, but I was like, but because I could accept his motivations, it made his bad guy, and even though I never really thought of him as too much of the bad guy until he had terrorists with him. But he was, you know, the promos he cut were like promos that you could understand and get behind.
Yeah, there you go. Do you have anything to add, Wei?
I really don't. No. I mean, I think you could take traits from anybody in history and employ that in a heel character for it to work. I mean, like you said, they're matters of taste, you know? You're not going to go around and doing, like, a Nazi character. I think that would be terrible.
There's been
plenty of them.
They've done it.
Fritz von Erich.
Also, what's his name? The Wall. Berlin Wall or whatever.
Oh, Berlin.
Berlin, yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Which was supposed to be a lot worse than what actually made it to TV.
Triple H. You know, he definitely said some sketchy stuff and said some horrible things to Booker T.
Wow.
During that angle. There's really no depth. I think, I kind of like the idea of having Dexter-type traits in a character where they...
Like Jeff Hardy.
Where they... Well, not actual abilities like Dexter, like Jeff Hardy, but like where they can just... Where they rationalize what they're doing to themselves, you know? Like, Dexter's motivations on that show are always benefiting of Dexter, you know? Like, and it'd be kind of cool to have that with CM Punk. You see that with CM Punk, and I think that's why CM Punk's heel character works, is because he's talking the truth the whole time, you know? And like... Complaining about things that you're
but
like.
It seems like
right you about that.
You're always in agreement with these bad guys. Isn't the point to make you dislike them?
But I don't think I'm in with agreement with them when they do really bad things. You know, I mean, I can understand their motivations to get them to the point where they do the bad thing. Right. Excuse me. It's like I think the best thing when you see a bad guy on screen or in a book or whatever is where you are with them to a point, and then you at some point are like, well, that's not how I would handle it. That's not what I would do. I would find another way out of the situation or find some other way to deal with the situation. And watching and like in WWE, a lot of times those heels that they write, maybe it's because the baby faces they have these days are just so whatever. The heels are the ones that you have to get behind because they're just more exciting that way. Mm. You know, like Daniel Bryan, the whole time he was complaining about things when he was like a heel and he was like his gimmick was complaining. I'm like, pretty valid points he's raising here, you know? He's not like You know, these aren't like jerk heel points that, you know, these are real valid that if brought in front of an unbiased commission, they'd probably side with Daniel Bryan on these things. And, you know, but not in the WWE. Maybe it's because Vince is a Republican and I'm not. So maybe I'm just at odds with his worldview. Yeah, that's true. Allegedly. Allegedly.
Not too alleged.
Not too alleged. Well, I guess he's not registered, right?
I don't know what Vince McMahon would be.
I don't think he would register. I think it's probably in his best interest not to be registered.
What does Damian Abraham have coming up? When are you overseas next?
I go to Australia the end of February. Doing a Southern Ontario tour in January. Doing Ottawa, St. Catharines, Peterborough maybe, some Kingston. And then we're writing a record, trying to make a new record, doing the Wedge and just yeah, that's it. Really, that's it. Writing a new record. That's going to be the big thing. I want to write a new record.
I hope you have some Fozzy stories when you
I will definitely. I will come back on with Chris Jericho because he's going to be my new best friend after this tour.
Yeah, no. we'll bring in Chris Jericho. We'll get Dave Meltzer on the phone.
I know. Well, like that's the thing. You guys are going to be my in with him. I'll be like, yeah, just so you know, we're on the same radio program kind of.
It'll be so heartbreaking if you come back and he's like, yeah, he fucking hated me.
It won't be that heartbreaking anymore because I think I'm prepared for it now.
That's,
you know,
that's
like
the way to go into things.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I think the reason the CM Punk thing threw me off is because I had such a good run leading up to that of people I had wanted to meet that somehow became my friend afterwards. So I was so assured that this was going to happen. So with Chris Jericho, I know he's not going to become my friend. If he wants to sit down and talk to me a little bit about Memphis wrestling or Japanese wrestling or tell me some
maybe
stories.
Maybe you have to have Colt Cabana on the Wedge the next time he's in the Toronto area. I know. Area. And then Punk will see that and that will be like.
That's my in?
The green light that will give him the okay. Well, okay.
The best is like I see Punk posts on Twitter these photos of him and these dudes in bands and he's like, yeah, me and blah, blah, blah from the amazing band, blah, blah, blah. And the dude in the photo is like, you know, smiling with CM Punk. And I'm like, motherfucker, that guy hates wrestling. I know that dude. He hates wrestling. I'm the one who should be in that photo. I'm the one who should be having the good time with CM Punk.
It's much like when you're trying to get a girl, Damian. Maybe you need to play a little harder to get.
I do.
You're just throwing yourself at him.
I know, but it's like, it's funny because like wrestling is the one thing that I get to just be a fan of. You know, like in music, I'm don't get me wrong. Like I'm still a colossal music fan. Like I love records, spend all my money on music and records. But you know, when it becomes your job, you interact with people. It changes the way it changes the way you look at music. You know, like it's bound to do it. Like I'm sure, like when the first time I met you guys, and all I wanted to do was talk about wrestling, and I'm like, I'm sure you guys talk about wrestling all the time, and you're like, yep. And it's just like, oh, yeah, because it's like when something becomes your job, no matter how much you love it, it's going to change the way you love it because you have to love it differently. Whereas wrestling to me is just like my 100% fan thing. And it's the only sport I like too. So.
Next time you see him, your first thing should be, so are you still the champion or what's going on there?
Yeah.
Whether he's champion or not, you ask him that. And then you talk to him about how I used to watch like NWA, Mid-Atlantic. That's when wrestling was really at its peak. Don't really watch anymore.
Yeah.
And now you're either going to piss him off or, the more likely, you're going to make yourself hard to get and he's going
yeah,
to have
true.
To try and pull you in.
That's true. Because he does like all the dudes in bands that don't like wrestling, I find. So.
And then, because I would put my money on you in the musical category where then you could outshine him with like musical stuff. Like the second he names a band, you rhyme off some facts and stuff about how, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that band?
I remember he was at our show, the one we did with Foo Fighters or something like that. And now suddenly you're pulling rank and suddenly you're positioning yourself on a pedestal.
I think as long as CM Punk never hears this, because this podcast will scare the shit out of him when he hears me getting advice on how to make him my friend. But that's good advice.
Yeah.
But except that I've exposed myself as being a mark for him. And I think that's going to be hard for me to to peel back now.
Well, you send your
my
friend.
My other thing
your
was
friend who was in your clothes.
That's true.
Who's black?
That's true.
As Damian Abraham.
That's true. I'll send Jason Richards to pretend to
there
be
you
me,
go.
And then no, I think with CM Punk, that ship has sailed. I don't think he's going to go back and become.
You're cutting ties.
But here's what I think is going to happen.
You're going to become friends with John Cena.
If I become a worker. Work my way up.
That's a long way to go to get
to the point where
CM Punk's friendship.
I know, but it's worth it, John. I don't think you're understanding how worth this is for me to do this. No, I'm glad that I get to be, you know, just like a nerd and a fan and write to these people and they don't write back and stuff like that. You know, it's fun that it's like
keeps you humble.
Well, also, you know, like I can talk the truth about I can be like. Fuck, I do not like what they're doing in WWE right now. Like, even though I think CM Punk's amazing, like, I just think they just have him there spinning his wheels. Yeah. And obviously he can't do too much with his leg banged up, but it's just like everything's spinning its wheels in a lot of ways. Even though the last pay-per-view was fantastic, it just feels like a lot of stuff is spinning its wheels. And like, I can say that. I can say that on Twitter. I can say that to my friends because like, you know, I know CM Punk from like meeting him, but like it's not like I don't worry that I'm going to hurt him when I say something like that because I know he doesn't care what I say. Whereas a lot of times, if there's like a friend of mine band a friend of mine that's in a band and the band does something terrible or stupid or makes a bad record that I don't like, I can't say shit. You know, like I have friends that do things all the time that I wish I could be like, oh, why would you do that? That's so dumb. Like, but they're my friend and I can't. Shit where I eat and piss off all my friends because it would make my life miserable. So yeah. It's like it's cool that I have that with wrestling.
I've always made that distinction. I've never tried to make friends with any of these people I cover because at the end of the day, I will – if something is really shitty, I feel it's my obligation.
Oh, it affects the way you cover. Yeah, absolutely.
I will never protect someone just because I simply know them. But yeah, that can be tough at times.
Oh, absolutely.
There's been certain times I have criticized people I know because the fact is if I take that out of the equation, there's no I know that this was terrible.
Well, it's funny because like I was going through my iTunes podcast thing the other day just kind of cleaning up and I saw the I Want Wrestling things and I was like looking at some of the subject lines and the last one Dave Lagana did was like about how bad TNA was with Hulk Hogan on one night.
Oh, you have all the shows saved?
I still have them on my hard drive still. Oh, and I'm just like looking back and like it's like how would that feel like now working there with probably many of the people that you criticized publicly.
Well, thus he took down all those shows
as
well.
So that's true.
There you go. Once it's out there, it's out there.
That's true. But like, and that's why in wrestling, like, I don't really have to worry about that much. And also because I'm mainly a fan anyway, so.
So on that note, Way, we have to do another one of these next week.
Yes, we do.
What do you feel like reviewing? I want to watch something different than XPW.
All right.
So something with wrestling.
I've got the whole week off, so.
Okay. We actually have a request from somebody, one of our, actually, Aram, who,
Aram has gotten a lot of love this week.
Yeah,
between winning a prize, feedback.
Well, here's the thing. He lives in Copenhagen, of course, and he says he's.
Oh, I've met him.
Oh, you have?
I believe in Copenhagen. No. Oh, no, this is the guy that wrote the email.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I apologize. That's
he. Is turning down his prize from the contest, and he says he doesn't want to, you know, cost us too much in postage.
It costs us nothing.
Not you and I, John. I guess he wants to save the company money, which is nice of Aram. But instead, he's requested if he could choose something to review next week. And Aram has requested...
It's got to be something good.
Bigger, Stronger, Faster. The documentary,
the Zero one.
About steroids.
That's a great documentary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could probably get the director as well on there.
Well,
Chris Bell, former WWE writer.
Let's do it. John, okay. And I, you watched this at the Toronto, what is it, documentary?
Yeah, the Hot Docs.
Hot Docs. And, yeah, it's been a while, so, yeah, I'd love to review it.
Okay, we'll talk about steroids next week and how me and Wei do not partake in them. I can't speak for Damien.
Well, if you look at my physique, you know that I'm juicing.
He has a syringe in his pocket right now.
I look like Ryback if he ate Steve Nash.
Yes. Well, as Wei.
Oh, no, not. I guess not. Basketball player Steve Nash isn't. He doesn't use steroids at all, so that's a terrible reference.
Yeah. You don't
know
that.
Who's like someone that's even more steroid ridden? Big Batista in the Big Batista era.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Both these men, allegedly.
All right, we're going to get on out of here. Damien,
Yes.
What was your song of the year in 2012?
Man, this was a terrible year for music for me. There wasn't much I liked.
What was your worst song of the year then? Either or.
You do not have enough podcasts in the week, gentlemen, to cover my...
Oh, plug the Wedge.
The Wedge is going to be on 11:30 on Wednesdays. That's my TV show. And
Eastern
Standard Time. CM Punk was on, and we have tons of musicians on. Diplo was on. Tons of people, and it's weird, and it's fun. So if you're bored, and especially if you report for the ratings, watch The Wedge. And if you report for the ratings, say that you have 15 to 20 other people in the room with you at the time that you're watching.
It's the key to these ratings.
But my favorite song of this year is a rap song, a hip-hop song, and it's Bird on a Wire by Action Bronson and Riff Raff.
Awesome.
And it is a masterpiece.
Well, we are going to go out with that then. You can follow our good pal Damien on Twitter, at Left for Damien. If you're in any of the many Southern Ontario cities or countries he's going to be touring.
Or Australia.
Go check them out.
Oh, in Taiwan and Hong Kong, we're also going to.
When are you going then?
End of Australia, so beginning of March.
Wow.
We're one day in Taiwan and one day in Hong Kong. So,
all right. Well,
yeah, it'd be awesome. I'm really excited. But
well, if we haven't talked him out, hopefully Damien will return.
I would love to, guys. Review. Believe me, anytime you want me, I will come here and get some more megabytes for people to download by rambling.
You can follow Way at Way0937 at Law Radio, and don't forget that this Sunday the law is on. I'm trying to do in my head what day this podcast goes up.
And it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Just go to liveaudiowrestling.com for all your needs.
Yeah.
Now that the world hasn't ended, it feels like it's so anticlimactic. Like, what are we living for now?
Isn't there another one where it's supposed to end in 2013? There's some other end of the world thing coming up.
Oh, okay.
So don't worry.
No, onwards and upwards then.
It was just a false finish.
Phew.
Okay. So there we go. All right. We'll chat with you all later. Thank you very much, Mr. Jimmy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Oh, thanks, guys, so much.
Hey, thank you, man.
Oh, please, anytime. Smoke some, bitch. Blow a kiss to my dick. Wash my body with the sponge. Feed me flavored rices. Put the chronic in my lungs. Tailor me a leather suit. On some Jodeci shit. Buy Coastal, man. We both to be rich. In the morning, do karate in the water. Hit sounds of samurais. Rocket shorts in the winter. Don't fuck with splinters. Roll with sinners. A bunch of winners. Catered lunch and dinners. Why my truck jar looks so empty? Drop a hook and then I'll probably cop an M3. Long nights, that's in the event. Somebody tried to get me, then to heaven they'll be sent. Oh, off the strength. Caviar and Porsche taste. All the beans are getting bushed and baked. On thin ice, I skate across the lake. With the CCM tags, my feet are like caches. Smoke premium cabbage. Blow a kiss to my dick. Wash my body with the sponge. Feed me flavored rices. Put the chronic in my lungs. Tailor me a leather suit. On some Jodeci shit. Black Coastal, man, we both to be rich.